Hi, everybody. Everybody's just joining us right now, and I want to thank you all for being here with us tonight. We're going to have a really great class tonight because we're going to be able to dive into some of the things that we've already learned since the beginning of this program in February and summarize some of that stuff, and we're going to take it a little bit further. So we're going to have fun. We'll have time for Q&A, and for everyone joining, you can chat, so you have a little place to chat down at the bottom of your screen in Zoom. You can type in a chat or you can ask a question. And if you want to ask a question, there's a place where you can raise your hand. So raise your hand and then I'll ask you. Judy's demonstrating. And I can see that you've raised your hand here online and then we can unmute you. Okay, so when we unmute you, then we can have a dialogue, which will be really nice. So some of you may want to ask questions in chat. Others of you may want to ask voice to voice. And in some cases, we may need a little more detail. So we may ask that you unmute yourself so that we can ask you more questions. Okay, if your question is a little detailed and we want to ask you more. So with the housekeeping out of the way, I want to thank everyone for joining us. And I want to thank the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation for making it possible for all of us to gather in this way. And I also want to thank Dr. Judy Mikovits for joining us tonight. She has been very generous with her time with this program and really is a huge inspiration to when I first sort of thought about this program. It was Judy that was the main inspiration in watching how she worked with people and watching how she understood the immune system and how to work with it naturally, but also when there is an opportunity, when there's a reason to go the allopathic route, she knows when to do that. And so I love the way that she's able to help us understand how to navigate this medical system, where we need to work with allopathic medicine and where we also need to think about our health and how we can work naturally with our health and maybe avoid some of the drugs and side effects that could be problematic as we heal our bodies. We're also here together to share what we've learned. So if there are things you've learned, I already know on the Facebook page, the Wellness Project at Price Pottinger's Facebook page, for those of you who are members of that page, you've been sharing information with each other. You've been answering each other's questions. And that's always really helpful. I want to remind everyone that one person's answer may not be another person's answer. And one of what we've been learning is all of us are different. And how our DNA is expressing is different, and therefore what we need to do in order to bring ourselves back to health can be different. So it's amazing to get advice from people and hear what worked for people because that provides us clues. But if it doesn't work for you, don't be discouraged because it may just be that that thing isn't really appropriate for you and there's another thing that would work better for you. There's always something that will work one way or the other. So Dr. Judy Mikovits, I just want to if for those of you who haven't met Dr. Judy yet, if this is your first time, and I know some of you, it is your first class, I want to recommend that you go back and listen to the other classes that we've had because they are incredible. Judy did an amazing job in February on giving us the what is the immune system? What is it supposed to do? So we're going to just touch briefly on some of that stuff. But Judy has a PhD. She's a molecular biologist with a specialty in immunology, virology, methylation, epigenetics. Did I leave anything out, Judy?
Most importantly, natural products chemistry.
And natural products chemistry. And that's one of the things I love about you, Judy, because you also have Native American lineage like me, and you have a passion for finding answers for the body. And those answers sometimes come from plants and they sometimes come from other things. And you started by creating medicines with plants, is that right?
That's correct. In fact, on our case report later tonight, our client took a cancer drug, a combination that was part of what we developed. Most of the early plants, most of the chemotherapies in the 80s before recombinant technology were all natural products. So I used to call myself a bucket chemist. That's what I did. I was needing in leaves and plants and herbs, and now I've come full circle in the last decade as we've realized in allopathic medicine, we've realized where we failed. And I gave a show last Thursday night called Medical Hope. It's TV Santa Barbara, and maybe later we'll put up some of those slides as we walk through that case report that is a cancer case, but there's so many other things we need to do to think about wellness. So I talk on Medical Hope with Bob Lovgren, and those are archive shows, and we can link it for the audience to look at it in great detail. That was an hour show, but I've really come full circle. I met Bob 15 or so years ago, and that's what we talked about. When we first talked, this was what was happening. And now first full circle, everybody's realized that the way we make natural products, the way we take plants and extract the cannabis lesson, the way we consider the entire body in a systems biology approach, which is the approach we've always taken, is the most important thing. And everything matters to wellness, and we must consider balance. So when we consider homeostasis and balancing the immune system and balancing every aspect of our energy in our life, then we hit true wellness while we heal from disease.
Yeah. And it's never a straightforward process, right, Judy?
No, it's not.
I mean, so we're going to go a little bit deeper into the immune system. We're going to do a case study and on cancer and what recommendations would be appropriate for this case. And we're going to talk also about emotions in the healing process. You know, you just heard Judy talk about homeostasis and balance. And finding balance during the healing process can be tricky.
Right.
We have a lot of emotions that come up during that time, and we're going to talk about why those emotions show up, how to work with them, and just kind of have a frank conversation about it, because this can get in the way a lot of times when we get into the challenging side of those emotional responses during our healing journey. So we're going to cover that, and then we're going to also cover your Q&A. I have all these questions from you guys that you posted on Facebook, so we're going to work through as many of these as we can. And I can already see that people are putting questions in chat, so that's great.
I need to fire away because I haven't seen the questions. So this
So let's jump in. Okay. So one thing I just wanted to start with is just a quick summary in that what I love about your description of the immune system, Judy, is you talked about the immune system. Its job is really to know the difference between self and other.
Yeah, nonsense, yeah.
And you also talked about it like it's kind of like this sort of the military force working on our behalf. Can you like give that quick analogy that you've given and that I think is so brilliantly explains how this works?
Well, we have an innate immune response. That's your frontline military. That's on your skin. That's in your gut. That's in all of your mucosal surfaces, in your mouth, all of the oral, everything that you sense the environment with. It'll be first your skin, where you have an entire different environment of good bacteria, good microbes, viruses that are living there that are communicating and metabolizing to the rest of the army, to the rest of the military. Your eyes, your ears, your sense of smell are your surveillance teams. Your gut, when you smell something bad, when your gut is like your Navy and your Marines combined, they go land and water. And so everything that passes through the water, everything that passes through, it's a quick decision at every level. Your microbiome at your throat is very different from the small intestine, the large intestine, the anus. That's a long ecosystem. Everything that goes through your colon, through your digestive machinery is sensing all the time with a different part of your immunity. So it really is a military. And when you think of how important it is to fine tune that, if you lose your surveillance, if you lose your ears, your sense of smell, your eyes, there's a danger to you. If you lose your touch, your sensitivity, we just came from a class in essential oils, largely why I'm not live tonight. And we talked about essential oils and which are good for healing the gut, protecting the skin. When the first thing we look at is doctors and physicians is how, look at your skin, look at the clearness of your eyes, look at, you know, your teeth, your mouth is such a big part of immunity. And we've done a lot with, you know, mercury and heavy metals and fillings in my cavitations, root canals, all really bad for your immune system because they allow the enemy, the non-self, to hide. So we build cavitations, you know, little like holes where a lot of bacteria and a lot of bad things hide. And they'll be the first to attack you. So when things are going on. So it's a constant conversation and a total balance between the good guys and the bad guys. And when you're in a disease process and your skin breaks out and you have cracks in your skin, and I'm saying that because our case study tonight, she told us about her skin. She told us about her hair. When your hair is thinning, when your color's not good, when your eyes aren't clear, that tells me a lot about your immune system and its health.
So we have a lot of signs that things are not going in a great direction from an immune perspective. You know, are there certain tests that you recommend people get besides sort of the visual signs?
Yes. I mean, I work almost exclusively from routine blood tests, liver enzyme tests, kidney tests, what we would call a CBC, because I can take a quick look and see where your white cells are, if they're on the low end of the spectrum, where your B cells, your macrophages, where these cells are in the balance. What does your kidney function look like? So your detox, your kidney is a critical part of that. Your liver is a very critical part. That's a major hematopoietic order. So I do tests. I look for lactate. I look for, that means your muscles aren't using respiration aerobically. They're in anaerobic, so you're basically chewing up your own muscles. I look for alkaline phosphatase, and I just learned this recently. It's an enzyme we've known in cancer therapy forever. And alkaline phosphatase is a major enzyme for detoxing endotoxin. So mm-hmm. Endotoxin is the outer cell wall of bacteria, that toxic part. You know, that vaccine component, which even if it's just pieces of part, the immune system is seeing that as bad, and alkaline phosphatase is spinning out of control. If your liver enzymes aren't functioning, if they go high or low, then your liver is having a bad time detoxing. If your kidneys can't clear the filtration rate, I think they call it a glomerular filtration rate, if that doesn't work. So really, you can get a whole lot from a CBC, a really good familial history, a good look at the diet as you did on this questionnaire, and just where they are, where the stresses are in life and what happened. You know, yes, there's so much you can see out of that simple, that all-in-one, what every doctor does and what every insurance company calls routine. So you can see a lot with that.
And I think some of the difference, Frank asked that question, and Frank, I think some of the difference, we did list a lot of those tests over in the clinical case study file that's there.
Yeah.
And we talked about the things that Judy looks at. And one of the big things I think, Judy, you talked about in one of our previous classes is this familial history and this client history, is the symptomology, what's going on in your life, what are the stressors, that this becomes very important. And I guess I would say, Judy, that in my discussions with you, you've said that you could spend 100 hours or more on a case study with someone, just depending upon how complicated it is and what's going on. Is that right?
This is actually what we do. So what Dr. Rossetti and I have been doing in vaccine court for the last 3 or 4 years is we basically look at the person or child who was injured or claims injury, and we back it up. And most of the time, you don't get fancy testing like cytokines and chemokines, the things I talk about in science halls and academic lectures, because those haven't made it to the mainstream, even for cancer. We're looking at very old-time tests from when I started back in 1980. So this is almost always the only information we have. So we look at, so when you go to the doctor, what do you get? Are you planning to travel out of the country? Did you travel out of the country? So they're asking you, have you experienced the stress of airline travel and oxidative stress? Have you encountered different ecosystems, different eating? You know, Montezuma's Revenge is just drinking Mexico's water when you're not from Mexico and you get diarrhea. They don't, because their microbiome is at balance with their water. And so it's just, we ask if you travel. We ask where where you might encounter infectious agents or other things. And then we simply look at family history of lymphomas, leukemia, HIV, AIDS, a lot of the toxins you encounter in your daily life, in your job. I'm asking, what do you do for a living? And a lot of times I'll get, I'm a plumber. Well, if you're a plumber, I know you're encountering wastewater, and I know you're encountering probably heavy doses of heavy metals, water runoff, hormones from feed, toxins. You know, what does your water supply look like? You know, and lots of bacteria. It really depends. We look here at the ocean, Red Seas. That's a different kind of algae growing in the sea, and that very much changes things. And we encourage people to stay out of the water because we'll get lots of swimmer's ear and you know, when we encounter a red tide, or as it's called, and that's just a different color of algae that grows up and wins the war of different kind of microbial in your whole ecosystem, your whole world. It's the microbes. Is it spring? Are you in a place with trees? Do you live in the desert? Everything matters, as far as the environment. Your immune system samples the environment.
Okay, so it's another way that it's sensing and communicating on our behalf. And what I find interesting is when you and Frank are doing your work, you're working like detectives.
Right.
And I'm not sure that every doctor has the time for that.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. That's what's changed about healthcare. And it's not so much individual time, but just the example. I tell everybody, go back to your grandmother. You know, in your grandmother's time, when you were a local community, when you lived wherever it was you lived, you had a doctor who knew who your parents were, who your grandparents were, where you were born, what they did for a living. They knew all of those things I just mentioned. And now we're in a world where you might walk in and get 15 minutes from Kaiser. Often on these vaccine case reports that we're doing, they don't even see the same doctor. So the doctor doesn't realize what was done. And now, of course, in medicine, we have, and I hate to say it this way, but we have drugstore clerks injecting toxic medicines and therapies when they don't even know what's going on in the history. They're injecting a very powerful immune modulator known as a vaccine, and they don't even know your history, and you might get 10% off your groceries. So it's just not a good thing where we are, because the doctor doesn't know that. And often, I know we don't have it on our questionnaire, but we didn't ask. Our case study tonight traveled 3 times right before she got sick, to Costa Rica, to the Amazon, is from Canada, and came to California. I know nothing about whether or not there were required vaccines in that study. So if she's listening, she might dig that up and we can think about it. But I can tell you a lot about Costa Rica, Amazon, and what might have changed in her immune system. And that's what I do look at. So we do look at that a lot. If father is in the military, lots and lots of injury, lots of things are our family with military, because then you've got a whole different dynamic, because you're on the road all the time, and there are certainly many, many, many too many stressors on being in war and being worried about being deployed and leaving your family at home, and just being in the desert. What we realized maybe a decade ago is that literally the sand in the air in say Desert Storm, that atmosphere, which we're not used to in most of the United States of America, the dust stimulates the innate immune system. The dust alone tells all of your enemies, to your innate immune system, to stand up and fight. They're called toll receptors. They're your danger associated molecular patterns, danger signals. Dust in your filling you up is a danger signal, and that can really complicate illness. And of course, all that sand has all kinds of pieces of DNA and microbes from lots and lots and lots of organisms. So
it's really important to hear you say all of that, because one of the things I want to say is we're probably all doing a lot better than we think when you think of all the things that could hit those toll receptors. So, you know, if we're here, we're probably doing a lot better than we think. And then
we're also using EMF.
The EMFs, the electromagnetic fields.
Let's talk about those electromagnetic and those energy and those smart meters. And those are always things we have to learn to ask. Apartment building, looked outside, checked with a voltmeter. The dental fillings I'm having removed a week or so from now. We have to know what the charge is running through our mouth as we're because that directly affects your brain, and you can feel it. And it also affects the balance of your pathogen, the activation of latent microorganisms. So it's not so much the acute infection, which may have happened decades or even generations ago, but the loss of balance of the symbiosis. It's no longer a symbiotic, you help me, I'll help you relationship between the microorganisms. Now they're bad guys overwhelming good guys. Nobody's communicating because the good bacteria are simply not metabolizing and not making the right signals for our immune cells to respond. And that's what often happens. It's probably at the heart. The gut metabolism is at the heart of all health and disease. And, I sent to Joel a paper that I've got here that I just pulled out of the June 13th Cell Host and Microbes, and I'll make sure we see this. This paper really should be required reading for everyone, and I sent it to my colleagues, Dr. Rossetti. We do something we call the Amazing Paper Journal Club, and when I meet with him twice a week, we're not allowed to have electronics. We just pick two papers and talk about them. So I gave this to him yesterday and said, this is what we're talking about. Fascinating.
That's amazing. I love that the two of you do that and that you're still researching and that you're always looking into things. And I want to underscore that, again, with medicine, a lot of doctors don't have time to do that the way our medical system is set up. And this is why sometimes we need to pop out of the medical system and work with people who know a little bit more. But that's partially why we wanted to create this program, is to get this information out for you. We are an education program and not we're not practitioners. We are practitioners, but our service in this program is not at the practitioner level, but more at the education level, because we want to get as much out as we can so that you can be your best advocate, so that you are your advocate. And Judy, you talked about how important it is to create a team. Right. Of people. So if someone gets a cancer diagnosis or a Lyme diagnosis or an autoimmune diagnosis, it's tricky. Yeah. And so who are the people on the team that you typically recommend?
Well, it does depend on the diagnosis. So Dr. Rossetti and I are a team, and that's what's important about this. Since 1983, Dr. Rossetti and I, in fact, it was June 6, 1983 was our 35th anniversary. And Dr. Rossetti and I started in what was called the Biological Response Modifiers Program. So it was a translational research program. I was a 23-year-old protein chemist, bucket chemist technician. I don't know how old Frank was. He's 75 now. So, yeah, 40s. And we had MDs, PhD, PharmDs, pharmacologists, people who really knew drugs. We had nurse practitioners. We had it's the entire team. It's your nutritionist. We did adoptive transfers. We worked with directly with patients, and we all got together every, Thursday night and did an Amazing Paper Journal Club. And everybody could pull a paper, whether you were a technician. There was really no delineation. The only thing the degrees did for you was give you a sense of who knew what. So very, 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 a good way. So we do the same thing. So your team is your general practitioner, your naturopathic doctor, your chiropractic doctor, your MD, your PhDs. This was what we always wanted. From the time I started working, I said every doctor's office needs a PhD. Because I sit around all day long and look at this literature and think about the cases. And this is what I did last December with Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt. So we met at several meetings over the last couple of years, and he was really comprehending the retrovirus story, and he could see it everywhere. So if he saw the retrovirus story, he started pulling up the old research. He started talking to me, and I just sat in the room and took notes on the patients. So as I sat in the room and took notes on the patients, and then I would shoot him a paper from my computer. As an idea came to my head, like this, the gut microbiota regulation of tryptophan is cell host and microbe number 23, June 13th, 2018. So real time, it's an open access paper. I pulled it right offline so anybody can go online to Cell Host and Microbe, part of the Cell Press, and pull this review article, and it'll just blow your minds, and we'll have so many more questions. But I did things like that with Dr. Klinghardt. I just pulled him up, and we were able to converse, and he shows me real time what's worked for him. I'm not a clinician. I'm a PhD. I think this way. I think in papers. He thinks in responses, in clinical responses, and resistance in difficult cases. So he's come to me. I'm drinking right now a Cystus Echinus tea. Echinus, however you say it, a Cystus tea, which is a powerful antiretroviral. And so as we all know, we have to regulate both our endogenous retroviruses. We've co-evolved for millions of years with retroviruses. And recently, in the last four decades, retroviruses are being introduced to us, as we know, through medicines, through vaccines, through contaminated blood supply, through contaminated food. GMOs jump retroviruses out of animals. Hormones ruin animal retroviruses. So we actually ingest things we never did before. So that creates that imbalance. Well, there are many things to stop, to normalize the conversation, to silence all the guys you've in your endogenous genome, your virome, if you will. It's not a microbiome. But this is a conversation, and it's talking communication, and it has to stay silent.
So there are two things. One is, what I will say is, as somebody who was vaccine injured at the age of 10, or really at the age of 7, but started manifesting symptoms badly at the age of 10, it took a while for a drip of symptoms. And I'm sure if I had known you back then, you would have spotted it right away. But meanwhile, the symptoms dripped along. By the time I decided to do something about it, I didn't know somebody with your expertise and also your constantly collaborating with people. And I like collaboration too, because I find that to try to know everything yourself is really difficult. And for those of you watching, if you're not, like, I love researching, and I've researched my whole life to try to figure out what was going on with the head-to-toe symptoms that I had. So I love researching, but not everybody does. And so, you know, don't feel like you have to do this alone. Find a team. And back then, I didn't have a team like with somebody like Judy, but I had to like change doctors a lot until I found somebody that was really willing to work with me. And then I had a doctor, I had a chiropractor that was more natural. I had a holistic health professional. I had a coach who helped me with the emotional side of my healing journey and sort of staying with the process and staying motivated and staying committed, I would say, to the process. And I had all these people, and I remember thinking, I've got a team, basically, you know, and I had to bring a lot more self-care into it. And we're going to talk more about sort of the emotional side of things as we go. But I just want to say, start wherever you can start. And we have in the file section, there's a file on Judy, the resources that Judy gave us in the first class, like all of the wonderful things, the studies that she linked. And there's a link to the functional medicine doctors that that Dr. Ben Lynch has recommended, and some other functional medicine doctors. Go check that out. And if you can, be willing to just change doctors. And I'll say that I found that some environmental doctors were covered by my insurance, and they were a little smarter because they kind of got all of this stuff. But some of the people I went to, a lot of the people I went to weren't even covered by my insurance, and it's very frustrating. But I would have to say it's worth it. I just managed my budget the best I could, and I saved in ways for things that didn't matter as much to me. And I decided that I had to decide I was worth the investment in my health. If I had to go without other things, I just had to decide that I was willing to do that. And honestly, at the time, I was kind of like somebody who never wanted to spend anything on myself. So I think part of my healing was actually to realized that I was worth, you know, I was worth it. I didn't always have to spend it on other things or do something else with it, but that my health was actually worth it. So take your time and go through this process and have a team. Mm-hmm. You know, we're part of your team, but we can help you in with this education and help you with different ways. And some people may end up, you know, being able to get into some clinical work with us. But I think that, you know, you'll have people in your area that you'll find that are smart and that are willing to be a detective with you and willing to go on this journey with you. There's a lot of good, smart people. So one of the things that Judy and I were talking about yesterday is we wanted to remind all of you that we're going to do our best to also refer. As we find really good people, we'll just add them to the list of doctors so that you can find people in your area. And I would ask everybody else to do the same. As you find somebody who's really good, I'm going to put a list out just of doctors and health professionals, and everybody can add to that list and tell us why you liked them. And this way we can inspire each other to sort of switch doctors and set up a team for ourselves.
Correct, because there's only, you know, what I learned a long time ago from Dr. Rossetti is you be you. You know, you're this Judy. He's stem cell man, and he does TGF-beta. And, you know, my eyes glaze over when he starts talking about SCAs and Lynn positives and mice. I don't do mice at all. And I just, you know, you develop who you are, and you don't try to know beyond that other than how to pull it all into system and always be willing. We had a fabulous panel at Autism One. So one of the things we can do as we travel along is resources. So Autism One. .org. You simply must see Dietrich Klinghart's talk. You simply must see Dr. Suzanne Humphrey's talk on vitamin C. You simply must see Dr. Janet Levitin's talk on homeopathy and natural ways to prevent infection and heal from infection. You simply must see Barry Smeltzer's work on camel's milk, a fabulous hour talk. The first day on Wednesday was an entire gut environment symposium with me, Dr. Zach Bush. I stayed until Sunday, and Dr. Zach Bush was well worth it. He was the last talk I could get before my flight. But that single talk really changed I found this paper as a result of that talk, but it really changed my world. And we take great notes. And so autismone.org is a resource for you. Most of the talks are up there, all of the one I gave a couple of talks, you can find them there. We train doctors. We train chiropractors. They give us our cards. We know where they are. They say, I'm willing to be part of the network, naturopathic doctors, MDs. So we can build a huge network that thinks alike, nurses, nurse practitioners, so that we don't have to be alone. I was in Cleveland, as you can see from my hat. I'll shout out to Ohio Medical Freedom Advocates a few days before Autism One. And we had Tetiana Obundiach. We had, again, Janet Leniton. We had Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry Tenpenny was also at Autism One. And it's just information. It just fabulous information. Christian Bogner, Chris Slade on cannabis. There was Ronald Ongden on cannabis. So much more than we presented here. And it's all there for you to watch. And if you don't understand it, you can come back to us and we'll answer the questions, or we'll ask the questions, or we'll put them. So there's just so many resources that are there for you. Every Thursday at 11 o'clock, Del Bigtree High Wire. So Del Bigtree High Wire, it's a YouTube show. Last week he had Zach Bush on. 2 weeks ago I was on talking about virus evolution, in vaccines like, DTaP. So he very carefully explained, Del Bigtree carefully explained why the DTaP, the pertussis vaccine, is actually caught, spreading the whooping cough in a way that is very dangerous, because the bacteria actually colonize and the victims don't get a cough. So when you're coughing and you're a grandmother, you're not going near that grandchild. Watch those two shows, 2 weeks. It's an hour show. I've got it on my phone, and I try to alarm myself when it's 11 o'clock on Thursday, because every week Dell teaches me something I didn't know. And I don't think I've ever heard a better talk than Zach Bush last Thursday on High Wire.
That's great. We'll link that so that everybody can access it. That's fantastic. Can you remind us the difference between a retrovirus and something like Epstein-Barr virus? Because a lot of people are running around talking about Epstein-Barr virus. Talk about the difference.
Well, Epstein-Barr is a herpes virus. It's a DNA virus. It's a very big virus. It doesn't get into the nucleus of your cell. It actually tethers itself as a little viral particle, and it holds itself in your cell, but it can't replicate with your DNA every time your cell replicates. So if that cell dies, and it generally infects B cells that make antibodies and other immune cells, but when that cell's lived out its life, which can be very short term, or when it's quiescent, then that virus really isn't active. This is why chickenpox, once we get it in the neurons of the cell where it infects the neurons, and then it comes out as shingles when something happens to compromise your immune system, to stress your immune system. We've co-evolved for tens of millions of years with herpes viruses, EBV, CMV, there's 8 or 9 of them, Kappa C sarcoma virus. Well, we call that HHV-8, human herpes virus 8. We didn't know it caused Kappa C sarcoma until HIV crippled the T cell, the adaptive immune response, and all of a sudden, all the Kappa C sarcoma virus woke up. All we knew is the only people that used to get Kappa C sarcoma was old men on the southern tip of Italy. Because as you age, you lose your methylation machinery. As you age, your DNA methylation, the primary way of silencing viruses, including herpes viruses, it silences the expression. So retroviruses actually integrate into your DNA. They're just a tiny little part. Herpes viruses are hundreds of kilobases. Retroviruses are 7,000 base pairs. So they can set themselves in your DNA. And the biggest single problem is they change the expression of your DNA. So they've not only made sure they continue through generations forever, but they've changed the expression maybe of what tumor suppressor genes. So they'll silence tumor suppressor genes and you can't suppress a tumor. They'll activate oncogenes and you'll have, oncogenes means cancer causing gene, and you'll have a cancer causing gene. They'll change the regulatory RNA known as miRNA. And those regulatory RNA tell the genes, it's not the blueprint, it's the expression of the blueprint.
Right.
You don't want a kitchen in your bathroom. You really don't want eye genes expressed anywhere but your eye. That's called teratogenesis when you see all kinds of organs in an egg when everything's gone astray. So this is, it's the gene expression. So the biggest problem with retroviruses, is the expression of them. And all the ones in your endogenous genome are, most of them are crippled. So when you hear a HERV, a human endogenous retrovirus, they're not able to replicate and come out of me and affect you.
Right.
The most important thing in all the retroviruses, including the XMRVs, is we proved that if we pulled it out of me, whether saliva, blood, urine, or a human, I could take it and infect you or your T cells or your B cells. And then I could take it out of you and infect someone else. That means it's infectious and transmissible because we have lots of these retroviruses. Are they infectious and transmissible? Did they learn, did that cow virus, the bovine leukemia virus that you were exposed to in your vaccine? Because it's in there. There are hundreds of thousands of base pairs of DNA. So count hundreds of thousands and divide by 7,000. And you start to see how much of vaccines contaminated with DNA, and they all are, how much of that is retrovirus. And if it's not yours and it's expressed, then there's a problem. And so this is, you know, the reverse transcriptase is that enzyme that allows it to be expressed. And so reverse transcriptase inhibitors are very, very successful. On Bob's TV show, Medical Hope, last Thursday, when I talked about ASCO, I talked about the fact that AIDS patients, a paper just came out in AIDS research in human retroviruses that said the AIDS patients that had been on antiretroviral therapy since the 90s are getting fewer cancers cancers now as they age. So overall, the process of dysregulation of gene expression is the problem. So if you silence reverse transcriptase in the integrase so that you can't integrate into any more of your DNA and cripple the blueprint or change the blueprint in some way, there is no problem. So this is what we're learning, and we're learning that this is just a case of you just can't introduce any other viruses, whether they're infectious or not. Pieces of parts recombine, as we learned the hard way in 2011, recombine and form new monsters that are infectious and transmissible. And those that we isolated were infectious and transmissible and are still causing disease in the families and all kinds of diseases, depending on what we call the viral load and how much of your DNA it has altered.
Right. So it's sort of like Epstein-Barr virus is not quite as smart in a way as the as a retrovirus that can actually go in and take control of your DNA and start deciding that it's going to do something different, or maybe go after one of the areas that's weak, like what they call a gene variance, that you may be predisposed to a potential challenge. Mm-hmm. And the retrovirus goes to that part and decides to turn that switch on. And now you're expressing symptoms of, it could be Hashimoto's or whatever it is that you're, okay.
Wherever the rest are.
There are people who
wouldn't be as smart. I just say that the EBVs, what a paper I used to always show is one that says pathogens rarely travel alone. So you see, HHV8 wouldn't have had been able to replicate and expand itself. Everything wants to live. Everything wants to survive. They want to overtake you. If a virus kills its host, it doesn't have a home and it's dead. It needs you to live. So they work together. EBV will work very much with retroviruses, with HIV, with HHV8, because everybody wins. They expanded their reservoir. And so this is the problem. Pathogens rarely travel alone, and they're helping each other. And so that's why our job and our immune system is to help our normal microbiome and help our normal methylation machinery and keep hormones out of our food, keep as many foreign materials out of our immune system. Like gluten has our immune system on, as we talked once before. So if you're eating lots of gluten and you're really inflamed and your gut's broken up, you've got lots of leaky gut barriers and all the good guys are leaking out of where they're supposed to be. It's like a building with no floors and you can't get up the stairs because you keep falling through, so you can't put out the fire. You can't be the weaponry out the window of the building because you can't shoot because you can't get there from here. So this is the big problem when you dysregulate everything. And we know it's just the expression. So cancer patients express their retroviral elements. They also express EBV and CMV. One of the biggest problems we had in HIV was CMV, cytomegalovirus, which is HHV4, I think. They count them. I'm not good at counting. HHV4 and retinitis. So it came out in the eye. That was one of its big reservoirs. So yes, the Hashimoto's thyroiditis was a really big clue that in fact this was a problem and it was a retroviral disease, because that had always been associated. Bell's palsy, a reservoir somewhere in the mouth. We talked about the mouth and what the communication is, we don't know. But we can see the clinical manifestations that were always thought to be HIV, HTLV1, and now we know many, many of them were the gamma retroviruses from the mice.
Now, we have somebody asking about Meniere's and whether it is neurological or an immune-related issue. And we've had a lot of people will bring up what they have. They have this condition and they have that condition. Can we talk about this idea of the immune system versus the brain versus the gut? And, you know, is there such a thing as one or the other?
No. So the gut, As you'll hear Dr. Bush talk about if you watch Dell Bigtree, the gut is really the first brain. It's really not the second brain. And I'm going to let him, I don't want to take the words out of his mouth because he's fabulous, but we always used to think the gut was the second brain. But all the signaling and all the, if you think of the brain really as just the microprocessor unit of a computer, and the gut is the keyboard. You know, the gut is playing and telling it what to do. So as I've said many times, the brain and the immune system are inextricably with, you cannot take them apart from birth. So if they're inextricably linked, there is no chronic, you know, neurodevelopmental, neurodegenerative, whatever you want to call it, disease, some chronic disease. Autoimmune is by definition immune system gone awry and lost self from non-self. It's attacking itself. And so things like Meniere's, when it's not an acute infection and it's a chronic relapsing repeating thing in a group of cells, that's almost certainly some kind of immune component to it. And it has to be, it can be normalized. And that's where stem cells come in. And so I heard some fabulous talks on stem cells at Autism One. I'm trying as hard as I can to think of Kristen's last name, but Dr. Kristen, who does stem cell technologies, is doing some autologous stem cell transplants, gave a couple of beautiful talks. I'll make sure I take a snapshot of her business card when I can and show it to you and get it online for everyone. But she has centers around the world, and she convinced me that for most of us, when it's not a leukemia lymphoma situation, for most of us, we are going to get benefit from our own stem cells. And so we can get our autologous stem cells and we can put them in the place. We can deliver them to the place where the problem is and allow them to reestablish the balance. So that was a fabulous talk. I should have mentioned her in the beginning, but I've always been very negative about stem cells because our stem cells could very well be infected with these viruses. And if you don't have them under control and if you don't have the immune system in balance, then you don't. Then you're just going to infect the new stem cell and cause more trouble. And that's what seems to be happening as patients, particularly with ME and ME-CFS and autism and Lyme disease have gone to different places and gotten autologous stem cell treatments. It helps for a little while, but then it comes back.
Okay.
But the help for a little while, you know, so if we can learn how to protect with cannabinoids, how to protect with nutrition, with food, with turning off the EMF, with putting that stem cell in an environment that gives it the best chance for long-term success so that we can rebuild the army, because clearly we have to shore up the weak link. And I would say I would never do stem cells until I did a month of gut. Intense gut therapy, at least a month, and it's probably longer. I'm talking way out of my expertise zone because I learned so much.
Do you think, I mean, because somebody was asking about stem cells for people with retroviruses and asking about, is there a difference if it's embryonic or umbilical or your own fat or blood?
Yeah, so there's a very big difference. So definitely you don't want embryonic. Those, you don't know how to direct them where you want them to go. They're what we call totipotent. They can do anything. And so you're more likely to have a problem because we're not God. And we just don't know how to direct them to where we're going. And it's highly expensive. As far as autologous, meaning your own, from fat, this is the area that Kristen has done, and this is where even Dr. Malin, who I met with at the Physicians Roundtable in Florida a couple of years ago, and I can post that talk or direct people to Dr. Malin as well, who does a nice fat one. It's the fat technologies and the inexpensive, where you're not culturing them in a lab and you're not manipulating them, don't want, totipotent stem cells. You definitely don't want embryonic. I like autologous adult, and I like some of those procedures that now are very simple, but there is a preparation process. If you put stem cells in and you haven't silenced the retrovirus or your retroviral genome, let's put it that way, because it's never one retrovirus. It's a conversation, and many times it's a lot of noise. If you don't silence that noise first, the stem cell just makes it sicker and spins things further out of balance. It's all about balance.
There was somebody in Mexico doing like goat stem cells or something, which gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay. So somebody's, Frank is asking, Frank is asking, are we approaching an age of epidemic plague due to a lack of a balanced immune system? And isn't that what you wrote your whole book about, Judy?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great question. And Judy's written an incredible book called Plague about her whole experience of finding these retroviruses. And as you're ready with your peer-reviewed research with your team to put this out into a highly respected journal, you get put in jail, right?
So it actually happened after it had been out for 2 years.
Okay. And then they came.
They found out the problem was a lot bigger than a bunch of people with ME/CFS, these crazy people, they don't know who they are. So they went, when they saw the paper in the beginning, they thought it was, and I think the accompanying article for opinion article from John Coffin said one new virus, how many old diseases? And shortly before I lost my career and was jailed, I had a debate with him and I said, how many new viruses, John, and how many new diseases have we created? That's the real question. And that was the realization, the big, oh my God, that was one of the chapters where they said, we can't protect the lab workers. See, the big problem is the lab workers, the doctors, the nurses, the scientists, just like the band played on, just like the HIV/AIDS epidemic, you know, they're the front line. So when the doctors couldn't be protected and we couldn't afford, is what they said, we can't afford to retrofit our labs so that anybody working with a mouse is in a biosafety level 3. And they even published papers about unintended spreads of biosafety level 2 contaminants. Well, I argued they're not biosafety level 2. They're the most dangerous of all retroviruses because they're as stable as can be in blood, in urine, in feces, on countertops for months, anywhere you want to see, dried in a soil. They can come back to life and rise like a phoenix. So yes, after that, it took 2 years. And they could not find anything wrong with our paper. They vetted it for 4 months before they allowed it to be published. And when, you know, and one National Academy member said it was the best first description of a new family of retroviruses ever. But in those 2 years is the realization of how much disease and how many strains. And how many new retroviruses were recombining, and that it happened in only 2 weeks. That was a renounce it or we'll destroy your life. And so they chose the destroy my life version. And thanks to you and many, many others, it's not destroyed yet.
Well, those of us who have read the book and also who are aware of what's going on, you're our hero and our rock star for not taking a payoff and letting them, you know, talk you into saying that you were wrong and continuing to be our advocate for health, the world's advocate for health. What I would recommend to everyone, if you haven't read Plague, it's a big book. Don't feel like you're not going to understand it. It's written by Kent Heckenlively, who is a sixth grade science teacher and an attorney, right? And so he wrote it in such a way that anybody can understand it. And we did a book review in the Price Pottinger Nutrition's Journal of Health and Healing. And maybe, Joel, we can put that review up for everybody. I'm asking Joel because he's the executive director, so he said yes. So we'll put that up so that you guys can read that, and that will probably get you interested to read the book because you will understand what's really going on in science. And part of the idea here being that we are our best health advocate, and Judy just said, so we, in the classes we've had, we've gone over medical cannabis, we've gone over bone broth, camel milk, bakelin, medicinal mushrooms, you know, doing things like non-GMO, limiting your exposure to electromagnetic fields. We've talked about all of these things with regard to how to help your immune system heal. And we've also talked about the fact that you're all different. And so some of this stuff will work for some of you. Some of it may kick off an immune reaction and you might want to step back a little bit. But Judy, also you're drinking a tea that I haven't heard of before. The Acistus, is that?
Yeah, I mean, the patients actually bought it for me and sent it to me.
That's great.
I don't have it in front of me how you spell it, but it's, I think, I-S-T-U-S-I-C-A-N-U-S, Cistus, C-I-S-T-U-S. I-C-A-N-U-S. You could tell I'm in vaccine court a lot because I have to spell for these idiot judges.
Well, I'll find a link. And see, what I like about Judy is that she's also been teaching us to rotate our the things that will silence the retrovirus and the things that will silence the virus, right, is that we rotate them. So right. If you're doing something for a little while, maybe switch off, give it a break, and try bring something else in. And that makes sure that your immune system is getting diversity, which is important for the gut as well. We need our gut to have diversity with our foods and the healthy, you know, the non-GMO foods that we're eating, the organic foods that we're eating. We need some diversity in there. So,
Dr. Klinghart is the one who realized this from his work all these years and realized it. And he put all kinds of natural products in his talk. So his slides are available. So if you simply go to autismone.org, as all of our slides are available, reference after reference, and I will pull as many down as I can.
Okay. Sharon is telling us that Cistus is Rose of Sharon plant. So that's
Sharon, right?
Rose of Sharon. Yeah. So that's great. So, so we'll add that to the list. Mm-hmm. So, I want to go into any other updates that you might be getting while you're out. Is there anything that you feel we should know tonight from your travels lately and the conversations you've been having with your colleagues?
Well, I think we should know what I did on Medical Hope, and I posted some slides, and we'll leave them up. This is Bob's TV show in Santa Barbara. It's a public TV show. He does it every Thursday night at 9:00. So he did it last Thursday night, and he'll call me. We've known each other for a decade or so, maybe 15, 20 years. So he'll call me every now and again and say, Judy, why don't you talk about this? So I really get trial by fire. So he called me on Tuesday and he said, can you talk Thursday about the ASCO meeting? That's the American Society of Clinical Oncology. And I didn't necessarily want to talk about it because they failed. And so they failed miserably. And we've spent 30 years making these drugs with billions of dollars of taxpayer money. And they're single targets that hit one thing and one thing only, and or at least that's the way they're marketed, and you can't use them unless you have that disease. And I see how we can balance so many of these immune systems and these defects with some of these drugs. So Bob had talked before about the right to try. So President Bush on May 31st, in between these two meetings, one was May 22nd to the 27th, Autism One in Chicago. ASCO was June 2nd to June 7th in Chicago. And in between, President Trump signs the right to try, federal right to try. If you have a terminal disease or an untreatable disease for which there are no treatments, for which every single disease of every single person in this room has, then you have a right to try anything that has passed FDA approval process for phase one. For safety, because the FDA's job is safety, not efficacy. They don't get to decide what disease. That's between your healthcare practitioners and you. So this opens up a window, and I talked about it with regard to the development of a natural product, a herbal derived four-plant natural product called Anustat, multi-targeted, multivalent, that I've been working on as a consultant for a company called Omnitura since 2004. So well before I learned of this, we were making these drugs targeting retroviruses, targeting the immune response, targeting natural killer cells, innate, adaptive, with different herbal remedies. Cistus isn't one of them, but reishi mushroom is, scutellaria, which is where bakelin is, scutellaria, bakelin is georgii, the various herbs. So we'll make those extracts knowing the targets and have multiple targets and multiple function. Well, that went through a phase 1/2 trial back in 2011, but it can't be used by anybody, and it would help so much of this patient population, because all while I was at the institute, and before I went to the institute, we looked at autoimmune. We planned it for autoimmune. We planned it for CNS. We planned it for pain. We planned it that way, and we have different variations, so it's not just one thing. So I talk through there, and I compare and contrast the failures of ASCO and all of these drugs we've made, which now they have to start over and start combining them, and it'll take another 50 years. Well, what we do with what we did with Anistat and the Autism One, this was, let's rediscover our precision medicine was ASCO. Autism One said, road to recovery. And Autism One and Zach Bush and Suzanne Humphries and everybody we heard, that was the road to recovery. So the little meeting that just talks natural products, an alternative meeting versus the one that has to be held in the largest convention center in the world, which is Clinical Oncology at ASCO, the little meeting had so much more healing. And I said that in as many ways as I could for the hour I talked to Bob last Thursday night. So yeah. I can get you that link and you can post it.
Okay, great. That'll be great. So we'll post that. And do doctors know about this right to try? Like if somebody has been through the mill and they've tried everything, does the average doctor know that this person can try other things now?
Well, I think since it was only signed and made a federal law, of course the drug companies in the FDA complained. They said, oh, these things won't be safe. No, they've been through safety studies. And so if a doctor's really smart, he can use these things, and it just puts so many more things in his toolbox, in his war chest, in his armamentary, so that he can do things. No, I don't think they know, since it was only May 31st, but that's why I went on the show to discuss it. Bob's been talking about it for years. And so I we've been working. Our company certainly knows it, and the smaller biotech companies that are, you know, so as we consult Mark Inc., our company, we go to people and say, do you know you can use this now? Because the doctors need more weapons, and they're all there and they're all available, and your taxpayer doctor dollars paid for all of them since 1980, since I started working. You know, this is now a huge opportunity, and President Trump has given that to all of us, an opportunity for wellness and for taking medicine back to the doctor.
Okay, that's great. That's a really good thing to know. So if you've got a good doctor and you tell them about this, you might be able to find some new options, which is great. Anything else on the research? Go ahead, Judy. What was that?
Or call us and we'll
call you. Yeah.
We'll move you in the right place. So the research has just been fabulous. Can't tell you how much is going on that's good and how much you're going to get. Cannabis, the other thing President Trump said he would support last week is Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and the Republican, I think his name is Gardner, from Colorado, both put a bipartisan bill through to give states back rights. And cannabis is right in the middle of it, so that we can produce our own food, we can decide our own laws, we can grow our own cannabis, run our own clinical trials, and so not only a booming economy, but control, so that we don't have contaminated stuff from Mississippi dried with glyphosate. If I haven't said Stephanie Senef, she was all over the meeting showing us every place where glyphosate was hiding, and that's really important. I wasn't aware of garbanzo beans and lentils. My husband's German. We eat lentils. You must know where your beans came from, because if they were dried with glyphosate, that hummus you think is good for you is actually quite dangerous. So with loaded with glyphosate, some of the highest levels. So there's a lot of that information there. So the research and the law, if the law passes to give back states' rights as our constitutional forefathers intended, then that opens up everything for cannabis and medicine in all of these laws, and us to, you know, wherever we're living, it just ends that nightmare of you can't mail it, of you can't do this and you can't do that, or the banks can't control it. So Natural News had a nice story about that last week. So always check out Mike Adams and Natural News, Sayer G and Green Med Info. These are your sources for, really truth in healthcare and truth in medicine and contaminants and food supply.
Yeah.
My sources anyway.
Great. Okay. So let's talk about emotions. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the things I see the most in my practice as it comes up, is that there's always a lot of fear. There's oftentimes a lot of anger. I mean, think about a cancer diagnosis where you've just been given a diagnosis and you feel like your body has betrayed you. And that's a common theme when something has gotten through our immune system and we feel betrayed. We feel, how did that happen? Maybe I can't trust my body. And then there's this process of falling into fear or possibly anger about the situation. Do we still have Judy on, Joel?
No, we lost her.
Okay. We lost Judy, but she's going to rejoin us. And so I'm just going to, Judy and I talked about this yesterday, and I want to share a little bit with you guys. So when I first started my recovery process, I was in a lot, I had a lot of anger and I had a lot of fear. And one of the things that I realized early on was that I didn't trust myself. I kept thinking that all the answers were going to come from my team of practitioners. And I kept adding to my team of practitioners so that I had some support. But when I ended up leaving the area, moving, and I didn't have my team around me anymore, and I started to relapse in my symptoms, and I realized that it was going to be time for me to learn to trust myself and to trust my body. So one of the things that I started doing, and here's one of the things I'll say. So the condition that I have is a connective tissue disorder. We are going to talk a little bit about estrogen and the hormonal effect when Judy gets back on. But I have a slow digestive system, and you heard Judy talk about the fact that your gut is really the sort of the first brain and the one that is responsible for 70% of our immune system. Also, 90% of serotonin is in the gut. So your happiness, your self-esteem, your ability to stay calm, your ability to sleep well, all of that stuff can be compromised when you have a gut issue. And also your willpower. Your willpower, if you have a gut issue, Judy's back. If you have a gut issue, one of the things that they found out is that your willpower is directly related to your blood sugar levels. So if you have low blood sugar, or one of the things that I have is very, very slow digestion. So there's an oftentimes I'll be hungry and full at the same time. It's difficult to have willpower if you're having malabsorption, if you're always hungry, or if you're not digesting well, or your blood sugar is in balance. It's difficult to stay focused, stay motivated, and have that willpower. And so once you start to heal your gut, one of the things that you may find, because I know I did, was all of a sudden I started to feel calmer. I started to trust myself more. I was less stressed. I had less anxiety, because what would happen to me is I would lie down at night and I would feel so anxious that I'd be waking up, you know, and I already had sleep apnea, so that didn't help. But I would be waking up with this feeling of anxiety, and I knew it was coming from my gut, because my gut, I always had a lot of pain. And I would have more anxiety when I had more pain, and that's what was waking me up all night. So it wasn't until I started doing coffee enemas before bed that I stopped having anxiety mm-hmm. before bed. So I would do the coffee enema, and it's not the best for everybody to do before night, but it helped me sleep. So it would get rid of all of the leaky gut symptoms that I would have at night. It would help my body clear out so that my digestion could keep moving. And suddenly I wasn't anxious anymore, and I would sleep like a baby. And that's when I realized how much my gut was actually affecting my mood. I also stopped having depression after 6 months of eating well and really, really focusing on the symptoms that I had and changing my lifestyle. So I think that when you start to, I guess what I'll say is, it took me a long time to trust myself. And so one of the things that I did, I had a coach who would say, if I was worried about something, she'd say, feel into your body and see what your body is telling you. And I would close my eyes and go to feel into my body, and all I could feel was pain. And because all I could feel was pain, I couldn't feel what was anything in my body. I didn't understand what she was talking about. I didn't know what it meant to listen to your body at that time because the pain was all I could hear and all I could feel. Over time, when I started to heal my digestive system, suddenly I became aware, and this happened at 5 o'clock in the morning. I had a corporate job. I was an executive at a company working a bazillion hours, and I was on my elliptical stepper at 5 o'clock in the morning because that's the only time I had to exercise. And I suddenly, because my gut had healed just enough that I could actually feel my body and not feel pain, I realized that I was nervous and that I was doing work that I didn't really want to be doing. And so underneath all of what was going on was this, I was in a very stressful job that I didn't even really want to be doing, but I would not admit that to myself, nor I don't think I could admit it to myself because all I could feel was the pain. So that's when, of course, as soon as I realized that, I had a kind of sobbing breakdown in that moment. And that's when I decided that I'm going to change my life and that I have to leave this job and that I have to find something to do. So that's not an easy decision to make. And when you're not feeling well and you're not doing well and it costs you all this money to go to all these practitioners, it's a hard decision to make. And so I began this process of writing down what it is I really wanted in my life. And I committed to myself that I was going to listen to my body. And part of listening to my body meant keeping a food log, as simple as writing down what I was eating and how I was feeling that day so that I could understand which foods were kicking off reactions in my body, which ones were I eating that I didn't sleep well at night, what was giving me that sort of icky feeling in my gut that was making me feel like I had anxiety in my brain before bed, what was on the days that I did better, what was I doing differently on those days? And I kept notes, not even just about the food, but who was I with that day? How much work did I do that day? And over time, I started realizing that the pain in my shoulders, if I worked past 5 o'clock and I kept pushing and pushing, I would start to get that pain in my shoulders and my neck that wouldn't go away. And by the time I got home, it was like this horrible, awful pain. As soon as I would feel a twinge of that, I would just go home and I would say enough. And I would stop pushing myself. And the more I listened to all of those little signals, the more I started to trust myself. And the more I started doing what my body needed over time. And this didn't happen overnight. This was a constant commitment to myself, a constant checking in with myself. I began to understand what foods worked for me. I began to feel like I had intuition. We all have intuition, but when your gut is a mess and you've got that lack of communication in your immune system that Judy was talking about, it's hard to follow your intuition. And so what that becomes when you're too afraid to follow your intuition, you only trust what everybody else tells you. And one doctor tells you this and another one tells you that, and you're paralyzed because you can't make a decision when you don't trust yourself. So part of this process is recognizing that there may be this thing going on in your body where your gut is so, your brain is so confused with leaky gut and pain. And even if you don't feel pain like I did, you might, like Judy, I think yesterday you were saying anxiety is a form of pain, right?
Absolutely. Anxiety is absolutely pain. So nociception, PTSD is a very real, post-traumatic stress disorder is a very real biochemical essential oils. If you smell a smell that made you sick, think about when you were in college and you drank tequila and you never drink tequila again. If you smell a smell that makes you sick in an essential oil, you can go right back there to PTSD. So all of these signals, the aroma, the senses, the everything I talked about in the beginning, very, very, very much. When you go back to that place or you don't leave that place, you're exactly right. I've spent the last, we can laugh about it a little bit now, but I've spent the last 6 or 7 years just trying to get out of the anger zone and the PTSD that won't allow me to move forward, but allows those retroviruses that I caught in our laboratories and are can destroy my health and were destroying my health, where I'd lost my brain, my short-term memory, my gut was a mess. So at some point, you've got to You've got to sit down and say, you know, how am I going to get control, you know, of my emotions? And so, I mean, I've always been, as I write in the book, very connected with, Community Presbyterian Church here in Ventura, our yacht club. So there are the people that you go to, many people. I mean, I went right away and got a Stephen minister, which is a one-on-one caregiver. And it just and worked with me every day to take me out of anger zone and allow me to move forward and just not blame myself. I didn't, you know, and not the victim, but certainly not the I've got to get justice. You know, I know now, and many lawyers tried to tell me that nobody's ever going to look at this. You're never going to get a hearing, you know, and one just flat out said, I can't take your money anymore. So as long as I'm paying him, I'm asking for a solution for him, from him, instead of honestly trusting God and getting a solution with from within and moving forward to healing people, which was my passion. And people like you give me that opportunity. And so slowly I'm sleeping as good now as ever. And yes, I use essential oils. Yes, I use cannabis. Yes, I use Scutellaria. Dr. Klinghart gave me a fabulous protocol. I'm getting the mercury out of my mouth next week. And so I'm healing, but I had to get to that place where I stopped, you know, I playing the victim. Yeah. I don't deserve this. I was just doing my job. Well, I knew the risks of my job, just like a firefighter, just like a first responder. I've worked with HIV since I got out of college. I've worked with Ebola. I've worked with everything. You know, I'm really sorry, yes, that I was exposed and to boatloads of the retroviruses and the government covered it up. Sure, am I angry or yeah, but I'm not going to let it destroy what's left of my life, whatever that is, because that's not, you know, that's not who I am, and it's not what I ever was. So yeah, the emotions are a huge deal, and everything is an electrical signal, and every stress activates these retroviruses. We talked about silencing. There are three hormone responsive elements. There are three stress responsive elements. So, you know, if you can't take the stress, whatever it is, like you said, quit your job, do whatever, change your world, because if you're in that place, and it's a horrible place, you'll never get well.
Yeah. And, I'm going to see if we can put this up, but right now, you guys, if you go to heatherdane.com/self-care, all one word, self-care, you'll get the article from the Price Pottinger Journal of Health and Healing about the steps that I took to unwind myself from that life and to start recognizing that to bring the locus of control back into my own hands. And it wasn't easy because we made big decisions. We sold our big house. We sold everything. Actually, the people that came through our house, we put price tags on everything. We had an estate sale person come, and the people were like, are they getting a divorce? You know, we changed our entire lives. And as everything got sold, I kept feeling lighter and lighter and lighter and better and better and better. And, you know, you get to the point where your health becomes more important than anything else in your life, because without your health, it doesn't matter how much security or safety or whatever you have, your health becomes the most important thing. And there are ways to prioritize that. We can talk about some of that at another time. If you guys read the article and you want to kind of dig into that, we can talk about how to find ways, creative ways, because that's what Joel and I, if you didn't already know, we're married, everybody. And we actually sat down and wrote out what we could do to change our what are our bills and how can we get them down as low as possible. You know, we went through the whole thing of all of the different creative things that we could do to change, so that I was not in a stressful job that was only adding to the problems that I had. Once I got rid of that stressful job and I had more time for self-care, I found that it was easier for me to heal, and I made a very strong commitment to my health. Now, I'm going to say a couple things. One is that there was a time where I went to Standing Rock a little over 2 years ago, and I got sprayed with chemicals. And I think you've been sprayed as an activist as well, Judy. And I didn't know what we were sprayed with. There were a lot of rumors, and there was a guy from the military when the military came to help us who got tested. So I had a sense of probably what they sprayed us with. But what it did to me is my digestive system kind of blew out, where it was almost like nothing was going in and nothing was coming out. Everything was just stuck. And I was kind of in an emergency situation. And this is one of those things where you could think it's scary. Was it menopause? Was it the chemicals? Was it all of the stress of what was going on? And then I had a toxic, narcissistic person in my life. Was it the stress from that? So all of that was going on, and none of the tricks that I had with my nutrition was working. And that's when I realized that life was asking me to have faith in this process. This was an emergency. This was not a light thing. I mean, I was working with an MD, PhD colleague who saw what was going on, and she was freaked out a little bit, and she was calling the Mayo Clinic to try to get me in there. And she called me and said, the only thing that they can do for you at the Mayo Clinic is give you a drug that you could only live for 6 months taking it. So I knew that that was my opportunity to step into faith and to start working on my faith in the process. And as I did that, I got rid of the toxic person in my life. I decided that I was willing to lose everything if that's what was going to have to happen. And as soon as I made that decision and got that person out of my life and started making these changes, things started to resolve. And it took a little while. You know, it took, I think, 4 months to get this super warfarin poison out of my system from Standing Rock. But the way I made it through was to work with my emotions and to not let it send me over the edge, and to say, look, I've been dealing with this condition for a long time, and, you know, I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other and continue to go forward. And Judy, right around this time, we were exchanging tips of what we were doing, because you got sprayed when you were working with, you know, activism around, not the vaccines, right?
The vaccine, we got sprayed in Atlanta a few years ago, yes.
Yeah.
And I was with, interestingly, I was staying with somebody who kept giving me Whole Foods. And several, like Sheila Ely and others, got very, very, very sick. They were in hotels that weren't as clean. I was getting clean food, and I had care from a wonderful person who was giving me that support. And I had support from the Nation of Islam, who were keeping me safe and checking everything so I wouldn't get killed. So it makes a big difference. And so, yes, we were sharing tips on how to stay well. And it really is a battle. And I think I can say, to summarize everything you said, and so people don't get the wrong, idea, you can't think yourself sick. You didn't expose yourself to that poison. I didn't expose myself. I didn't infect myself with these retroviruses. I thought about it occasionally just to prove that they cause things, but we've done that in the past with other things. But and yes, none of us deserve these attacks. We can't, think ourselves sick, but we can think ourselves sick. We can allow the pathogens to take hold. We can allow the anger to have a stronghold, as I discussed. We can allow, and the anger is just going to spin every virus reservoir out of control. Or I can drink enough alcohol to cripple my liver so it can't clear the retroviruses, or my kidneys, or whatever. I can destroy my gut. I can have my husband be a really unhappy man, and then I'll be a really unhappy wife. And so these are things that make us sicker. I don't think by any means we can think ourselves well, but we certainly can make ourselves sicker if we
I think that part of the idea of working with emotions is the idea that you're taking the stress, the extra stress off, because when I was at my worst during different periods of my life, the more in fear I was, the worse my symptoms were.
Oh, absolutely.
The more calm, how I was breathing. We all know that when we tighten up, which is fear, things can't move properly and things hurt more. And the doctor's always saying, breathe, if somebody's got to give you a shot or something, take a deep breath. If I'm getting a massage, and they're helping me and they're like, breathe. And it makes a huge difference. So I found that if I could take deep breaths and talk, say things to myself that would help me calm down, the pain would start to go away and I would stop tightening around the pain, because if I'm tightened around the pain, I'm not giving my body a chance to relax and to let that pain move through and to let whatever's going on dissipate. So this idea is that as long as you know that the emotions are part of this process, and that if you have a leaky gut and you've got a retrovirus, that you may have brain related symptoms that affect you emotionally, emotional symptoms. And that if we get too caught, so listen to that, listen to those symptoms, but remind yourself that the symptom, this emotion is a symptom.
Right.
That you can work with. So that you don't spiral out of control. You know, what I love about Louise Hay, my co-author on the two books that we wrote together, is that she would say, stop scaring yourself.
Right.
And I mean, this is a woman who lived alone and lived alone into up till 90 when she died. And imagine what it must be like. We met with a guy who was 89 years old and he couldn't sleep because he was terrifying himself at night. He would go through all these things in his head of what could happen. And so one of the things Louise did, who had a terribly traumatic childhood, was she would say things to herself, affirmations that would calm her down. And so what part of this process is learn to work with the symptom that you have. And if the symptom is emotional, there's all kinds of things to do that we've gone through around silencing the noise.
Right.
You know, of your immune system is everything's ricocheting and you're getting these emotions as a symptom, but to also talk to yourself and remind yourself, take deep breaths, let your body relax, because that will take the stress that's making it worse off your body.
Right. And it's so hard to do. And that fear and anxiety is so real. And I go back to that. And I think we put it in the book in the very beginning, you know, you're shackled, you're drug out of your house, you're thrown in a cell, you don't know any idea what's going on. And all I did all night long to try and get any kind of sleep was just keep saying the Lord's Prayer over and over and over again, because that calmed me. That let me know God was in control and I'd be all right.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, that, you know, you're in these positions and that's the whole thing about faith. It's you trust, and you trust something you don't understand. And you know, none of us understand the entire biochemistry, and we're not going to figure it out easy. So we've only got a few years in reality to, figure this retrovirus thing out and stop this pandemic. But if everybody's out of control in fear, and this is the thing I've only come to in the really last few months, is stay out of the doctor's office. You know, I have so many friends, dear friends, and they just keep running back for that PET scan, or they just keep running back for, and when we get to our case study tonight, they just keep running back. You know, and this test and that test, and waiting for the test to say, oh, you know, I'm sick or I'm well. You know, as you said, you know you're well. And just because you're infected, or just because you have Lyme, or just doesn't mean you can't be well with these. If we use and we think about the cannabis and we think about the therapies and we take these practitioners, all these wonderful people we've been talking about who are learning every single day how to fix this, and the great God-given plasticity, we can develop new brain cells, folks. We can fix it.
Yeah.
We can't fix it if we let it spin out of control and we shoot ourselves, you know,
right.
Or somebody shoots us,
you know?
And that's stupidity. I mean, if you get out there and you don't have control of your emotions, you will get killed.
Yeah.
And we had to have control of our emotions, or we would have gotten killed on the several times they tried to kill us. By the way, just for fun, Kent and I are writing another book to tell us all we've learned since.
Really?
And this one will be so much more fun because Kent's going to write it as told by me. So he can take out all those really sciencey parts that I wouldn't let him take out before.
That's great. I'm excited about that.
What's happened since and how we healed. We're going to talk about these very real things and these very real things of what happens to you and how you can heal. And it'll be a book like everything else we've done our whole lives. it'll be hope. It'll tell you, you know, we can beat this thing. It might seem like a David and Goliath situation, as it has to us, you know, for the full decade that we've been doing it, but it's not hopeless. And, you know, with one, we talked to a client last week, and I just said, fix the gut. And the quickest solution was, I was in the middle of a conference call, so I said, go online, look up Zach Bush Restore, buy it and try it right now. You can get it in Amazon, get it right now. And he wrote me 3 days later. He said, you won't believe it. You just won't believe how calm I am. And he was tough on the phone. And so is it going to fix everything? No, but he realized that there are solutions and there are many fabulous people working on those solutions every day. And we will find the right combination, but we need you to be there at the end. And that's all emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And the Restore that Judy was talking about is, you can get it on Amazon. And I actually just talked about it on my radio show with Zen Honeycutt, because she works on GMOs, and she was recommending it as well. So for those of you who don't know about Restore, it's a liquid mineral supplement. Right. And it's basically, so we just talked with Morley Robbins about minerals in our last class. And I have told people about taking 40,000 volts and taking Andersen's, and you know, when you're in the fear process with your health, everybody's worried, how much should I take and what should I do? And I always say, if you're super sensitive, you can always just start really low and listen to your body. And if you're feeling good, you could try adding a little more and listen to your body. And but the Restore is interesting because it's a little pricey. It's going to be more pricey than your Andersen's and your 40,000 volts. But if for those of you who are worried and don't want to think about it, it's great, because you just take it according to the bottle, and you just take it, and it gives you a mineral water, basically, extra minerals, electrolytes. And the ones that we learned about last week, like magnesium, potassium, zinc, things like that, that help you start to feel well again and help your – but I found mineral balancing, the minerals were one of the things that helped me feel calm and less stressed and less overwhelmed with stress, as well as cleaning up the colicky parts of my digestive system. And so it seemed like a really good solution to start with the Andersen's and the 40,000 volts, which is what I was doing. But go check out Restore and try it, and take just a little and see how you feel, and write it down. Notice how you're feeling, because one of the things I've noticed is that a lot of times people will forget that they had a symptom. I've done it. If I don't write it down so that I can see how well I've been doing, I might forget that I had a symptom, because it's gone now. And so you'll start to see what's actually working for you. And why that helps is because we go through life, we have traumas, we have stresses, and we have hormonal events like menopause and andropause or pregnancy or whatever it is. And when those things change, if you've got do I have a silenced retrovirus until I go through menopause? Maybe, right? Yeah. So let's talk about that while we talk about hormones, Judy, is why, why is estrogen, why do 75% of all the people with immune, autoimmune conditions, 75% of them are women. And so we say, what is going on with estrogen? What is up with estrogen in the immune system?
Well, the HPA axis is everything. It's the adrenals, it's the pituitary, it's the hypothalamus. Hormones regulate every part of the immune system. People consider vitamin D a hormone. You know, pregnenolone is made by mitochondria. Most hormones, the most production is mitochondria. So we don't know that, and all of these diseases are of mitochondrial dysfunction. And the first thing, it's our energy. And so what does a retrovirus do? Well, it takes the energy from the mitochondria. And what our friend, our longtime colleague, Dr. Mike Leonardo at the National Cancer Institute did recently, in all these years when we worked on HIV/AIDS, is he's done an entire life work of how retrovirus has hijacked magnesium, zinc, manganese. All of our minerals are being hijacked by the expression of the retrovirus. I know the XMRV had two hormone responsive elements. They're responsive elements, which are basically on and off switches. So if your on and off switches are on because of menopause, the estrogens of teenage girls, think about in boys, it's autism. And you remember from our book, autism is just, CFS in baby boys, because the hormones are different for a baby boy, but it's driving the activation of the immune system. And, hormones are just key right there in everything. The vagus nerve, the responses can't tell you how much it is. So in these hormonal changes, what we go through in life, it really matters. This is why I've been running around the world trying to say, please don't vaccinate a teenager of any kind, anybody between 12 and 21. Do not vaccinate them with anything. They haven't developed their brain yet. They haven't developed the front. They haven't developed empathy or emotions. So all these suicides, all this anxiety, they don't get a chance to develop that part of the brain to maturity, and it doesn't develop until more or less 22. So if you're injecting immune-stimulating, powerful immune-stimulating things into the body, including hormones, because all of our foods, we've got to keep it out of our meats, we've got to keep it out of things, then you're ending up destroying that process. It's just like you burned it out. You over-fried that part of your development. And once the fire is stopped by your microglia and your astrocytes and they calm everything down again with all your work, then you go back to developing and going back, because an organism is not going to make sure it develops higher learning and higher thought modes if it's going to die because of the fire that's on in the brain from what these stimulants and toxins in our environment are doing. And those are all contained in these so-called vaccines. So it's just a right time for everything and a right time to expose ourselves to things. So yes, Hormones are a critical part of it. And that's why women is more autoimmunity and men is more psychoses and autism.
Okay. Because I know I've found that this wouldn't be true for everybody, but in my particular situation, menopause seems like it's better than it was when I had a lot of estrogen flowing through my body.
Yeah. It might be better for most people, but again, lots of stress on the liver. So if the liver has experienced any other toxins, when you're clearing all those hormones and things are going on, this is the issue. And pregnenolone is the natural turn off switch for THC cannabis and those anxiety and psychosis emotions. So when you don't have a turn off switch because your mitochondria are diseased and you can't make these hormones, you don't get the turn off switch for many, many, many things. So yeah, it's the complexity is amazing and really beautiful when we see God's work, but it's so much fun when you learn things like the paper I showed you earlier. You see how much tryptophan in your diet changes everything. So just taking a look at tryptophan changes everything. It just explains so much.
Yeah, and I know we're going to talk about that in the case study. I wanted to ask you about, so if someone's having a hormonal issue along with their, if they focus on the things we've covered on the immune system and the silencers that you've talked about, the things that silence the virus and the retrovirus, and eating well and getting rid of the stress and repairing their gut, that this should help the hormones balance out as well. Is that right?
Correct. And you can do some natural things. Whenever I get a hormone issue or question from somebody, I send everybody to Leslie Carol Botha, B-O-T-H-A. And Leslie is just the hormone queen. She knows bioidentical hormones. She knows environmental toxins, everything about hormones and its interactions. And we've worked now 6 or 7 years together to understand, just as Stephanie Seneff and I, Stephanie, the genius on glyphosate, and I worked together to understand what glyphosate does to retroviruses. Leslie Carol Botha and I work to understand what hormones do to retroviruses and how we can reestablish the balance by removing the stress or the toxin, or finding a way to balance those hormones. Because in those cases, some bioidentical hormones are a good idea even as a cream or something like that, to just calm the fire down on the back of the neck, just silence everything so that it's not a peel you off the ceiling situation.
Right.
When you're in a triage situation, when you hit the emergency room and it's an emergency situation, we have to reach for some medical solutions, some traditional therapeutic drugs that calm everything down, or we've lost the war.
Yeah. One of the things that's been working in the connective tissue world is something called diosmin, which is a flavonoid. Oh. And apparently it helps the estrogen receptor beta that could possibly have some problems. It helps to manage estrogen and regulate estrogen. And they've been finding that it's working for fat disorders and connective tissue disorders. So fat disorders being a type of specialized connective tissue, that it's been helping. It's one of many things, but some of the things that were talked about by the experts in connective tissue were a lot of what you've been talking to us about, Judy. It's like if you're focused on your gut health and if you're working on immune health, this all might take care of itself. And if it's not taking care of itself, then diosmin could be a good potential option. What's that?
How do you spell that?
It's diosmin, and it's a flavonoid.
I wrote flavonoid. I know what those are.
Yeah, and it's just in Dr. Karen Herbst is one of the sort of top connective tissue experts.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And she's gotten into the fat disorders as well, where the body just starts growing, and it's not that the person's eating too much. It's just right. That the fat is growing kind of out of control, getting hard. The lymph is not flowing properly.
Right.
And, so the whole function of the work has been to get the connective tissue to be supported and for the blood, for the circulation. So somebody asked about heart issues. They're using diosmin in the heart for heart issues and for circulatory issues as well. And there's a company called Progressive Labs that makes a venous support product that has the diosmin in it. And it's been showing to be helpful for people, along with quercetin and several of the other things we've talked about in these classes.
Great. Thanks for that information. That's fabulous. I saw a question pop up there about needing to know more about connective tissue disorders. So maybe we could plan a show.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some fabulous new reviews, and certainly some of the reticuloendothelial retroviruses are part of the problem in connective tissue disorders. So I've had it on my short list to focus on some of those papers, and I just saw them recently. So we should really dig into that the next.
We'll
time.
Do that, Sharon. We're going to do a class on that. Okay, so I'll put that on for our upcoming schedule. I know a lot of people have the question because Judy, I remember. You were sharing with me some of what you had learned in vaccine court, because you're looking at different things all the time and talking about how the retroviruses do affect the connective tissue. And so I used to sit and listen to parents telling about the symptoms of their children with autism, or the symptoms of, I'd listen to somebody else talk about symptoms and I'd be like, I have all of those symptoms, you know? I mean, I could function, my brain was functioning, but I had all of the gut and the body related stuff and the deficiencies of these different vitamins and minerals and things like that. And it's kind of like, when you first told us that we all have the same issues, it's just affecting us differently at where we're challenged, it makes so much sense to me.
Right. And it depends on the age where you get the problem. So naturally, if the kids get affected so that the connective tissue never forms appropriately and the connections aren't made, which is what happens when your body goes back to put out that fire that should have never been on in your brain, because your brain and your gut are controlling everything. That's when all of these things, and certainly we've got, four decades of knowledge on the retroviruses and connective tissue disorders. So I'll bring all of that home. It'll be fun for me to catch up on it. And I do know that Dr. Klinghart talked about those and had references in his talk. And he was going to make those slides available to all of us via his website or Facebook. So I'll ping him and get him to send them to me so that I can send them to you.
Okay, great. That's great. And what we'll do too is, for those of you who are following along with this program, we are planning to do longer protocol focused classes. And one of the ones we wanted to focus on specifically was connective tissue disorders, because most doctors don't know what to tell you. And oftentimes they will tell you you're wrong about certain things. Or I've seen, I have clients in Australia. I have a client who was told that she had anorexia and was put into a refeeding eating disorders rehabilitation center and force fed, when what was really going on was she had a connective tissue disorder. So she, because this happened early in her life, she started having all kinds of other emotional issues because she was, you know, sort of traumatized through no one listening to her and telling and understanding the GI, the gut issues that she was experiencing, because the Ehlers-Danlos or the connective tissue disorder hit her in her entire digestive tract. And so it's difficult to be told your whole life that, you know, you're not feeling what you're feeling, and to have people trying to force protocols on you that aren't actually fixing the problem. And so for those of you who've been dealing with a diagnosis for a long time, you know, I just want to acknowledge you for being here and doing this, because, you know, you have to, I think a lot of times we have to talk ourselves out of like getting back up again. You know, we fall down, we have to get back up again. And so you're here, and that tells me that you're strong, that you have courage, and that you're committed to this process, even if you don't always feel that way. And what I've found in my practice in working with people who have like sort of at the end of their rope chronic conditions is that when somebody has that willingness, they find answers. And so just, you know, be willing to experiment and go through this process and find your team, because you're here, which means that you're a seeker and you're wanting to find ways to help and support yourself to get well again. So, Judy, let's talk about the case study.
Okay.
And she did? Okay. Who? Our case study? In my text? Where did it go? In my phone? Okay. Okay. I've got a note here.
Okay.
Let me just check here. Okay. Do you know if she wants us to use her name? We're going to call her D, okay? We're just going to call her D, and she'll let us know if she wants us to use her name. But Judy, she just said that her most recent CRP was 123.
Right. That's interesting. That was the first thing I was going to talk about. So C-reactive protein is a marker of acute inflammation. That means something going on now. So for those of you who don't know about Dee, Dee is a 48-year-old woman who's had been treated for a Hodgkin's lymphoma now for a decade. So she was doing pretty well. She relapsed in 2014. She did a standard therapy, one of which I helped develop, with four very highly cytotoxic chemotherapeutics called ABEBD, so for adriamycin and all the various drugs that start with all those initials. And so she did pretty well, but she came out of remission pretty quickly. And then by 2014, and that's usually not a good sign, so it's a stage four disease. By 2014, she relapsed again and got one of the checkpoint inhibitors, which is taking the brakes off your immune system so that it can see the cancer. So if you take the brakes off your T cells so that your adaptive immune response can see it, because these decoys are hiding themselves, and she had no idea she was fighting a cancer. So she did pretty well the last time she kind of relapsed with the checkpoint inhibitor. So teaching her immune system to see the cancer again worked. And so she got there. In November of 2017, she went into another crisis. So she lost 20 pounds. Her lab work, Her CRP showed acute inflammation. Her liver enzymes went off abnormal. Some toxins going through her body that she can't control or get back to balance. She went to a naturopathic oncologist who gave her some supplements and tried to balance, rebalance things. And then she's in an extremely stressful job, as we talked about all evening in February of 2018. And she traveled almost, she went to the Amazon jungle. She's in Canada, on the west coast of Canada. She went to the Amazon jungle to go get some healing, and then a 4-day seminar down in California. And then she went for a 2-week restful holiday in Costa Rica. So from February 25 of 2018 through April 4th, she's symptomatic. She's short of breath. She's lost 20 pounds, which is a sign of cancer. Unexplained weight loss or weight gain is a sign of cancer. There's something going on. She thinks she has a respiratory infection, but I couldn't get diagnosed what she got. Her skin was bad. Her hair was falling out. What does that sound like? Oh, autoimmunity? I wrote aluminum toxicity because she was traveling. She was in different places. Did she get, water? I thought to write to myself BioSil. I made a note to myself about BioSil. I'm suspecting aluminum toxicity is perturbing her immune system. And so, because the similar relapse in 2014, and I'm assuming when she said that, she had autoimmune components. So again, her T cells are attacking herself. So using the checkpoint inhibitors, which got the cancer under control, caused her to continue to attacking herself. And we see a lot, we being Dr. Rossetti and I, as we go through these cancer cases with these immune therapies, these new immune therapies. This is the one called Opdivo on TV. So when you have these checkpoint inhibitors and you take the brakes off the immune system and say, go get the cancer. Well, the problem is if you don't put the brakes back on, it's like when you have the emergency brake on and you feel the engine burning and you smell it. You say, why is my foot on the gas pedal and I'm not going anywhere? And if you're not careful, when you take that emergency brake off, when you realize it, you're over the cliff. So one of the hardest things we have to do in treating with these immune therapies in cancer is put the brakes back on. Once we've taught the surveillance system to see the tumor again, we can't always put the brakes back on. So now she's got a lot of autoimmune system symptoms, and she said, but she's always been in a state of anxiety, constant anxiety. Interestingly enough, her whole life. So we hear that pain. Anxiety is pain. So there's been a constant state of pain, a constant state of stress with regard to her her job. And I travel a lot, but going for 2 solid months from Western Canada to the Amazon to California to Costa Rica, that's a tremendous amount of oxidative stress, different microenvironments for your gut, different food, different oils, different toxins, you name it. That's a lot of different things impacting the immune system. So interestingly, she wrote that when she was doing well on the cancer or lately on a day-to-day basis, she's much better with anxiety. Overall, she's always had anxiety, but I see windows of balance. So I see that immune dysregulation that says why that immune therapy worked for her in that cancer. She's got, I looked at her labs. She's got that high level of CRP.
What should it be? What should the CRP be?
Oh, 0 to 3 or 4.
Okay.
But it's acute. It's acute. It's acute. It's acute. That means right away there is something in her world since February that is a toxin that is causing her acute inflammation.
We're going to bring her on the line and see if she can tell us some stuff.
Okay.
On.
She also had brain lactate, which contributes to anxiety and bipolar disease. So brain lactate, which means her mitochondria weren't working in optimum level. They were in lactate mode. So that was the issue.
Okay. So Domenica, are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking on my case study. I'm so eternally grateful.
Well, we're so happy to be talking with you, and thank you for giving us the opportunity. So you had mentioned in text here that you didn't have any vaccines or anything up for your trips. That's right?
Correct. And when normally I don't travel so much to close together. The California trip was the only one that we had had planned. It was to take my son to see Tony Robbins for a grad present. And then I had an opportunity to visit this tribe in the Amazon that I had previously traveled to a few years ago. And I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to go. And I did. And it was amazing. And then the Costa Rica trip on the tail end of the California was just to do nothing and put my feet in the sand, which by the time we got there, I needed to do.
Right. So is there anything, CRP and those liver enzymes, something right now, some toxin in your environment, I don't know if it's gluten, I don't know if it's a disruptive gastrointestinal, a bacteria that's a good bacteria for Costa Rica or the Amazon, was there something in a natural product that changed because something is causing you acute inflammation and that's going to drive that aberrant T cell response and
right.
Literally drive the discommunication between the B cells and drive a cancer process.
Well, can I let you know that back in last year in July was the last time I was on any kind of chemotherapy, and I stopped it because it wasn't working. I was feeling really, really well at the time, so I wanted to have a chemo break. My CRP last September was 8. It was the first time it was ever a single digit ever in the last 10 years.
Right.
And then through the fall, I felt really well. But it will, like I said, but in November, I started feeling unwell, felt some fullness in my liver. So when I got lab work in January prior to traveling, my liver enzymes had never gone down to like super normal, but they, because my liver was, I've always had active disease, but the liver enzymes did shoot up in that January, February time period, and the CRP, I think, was 75 already. It took a jump from September at 8 to 75 in January, February, and then it's just continued to rise as my situation's gotten worse. And I have to say I fell off my gluten-free wagon a bit because I just frankly had a few weak moments of I'm so sick and tired of watching what I'm eating, and I just gave in a few in the last few weeks. I haven't been on my regimen as well because I just, my, you know, my app, it's a snowball, right? You know, my appetite wasn't great, so I was trying to eat well but still sneaking in things that just tasted good in the moment. and you'd think that I have every reason not to do that, but I have some days I just want to throw my hands up because I'm so exhausted from all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, appreciate that emotion, because you just don't want to think about it all that much. You talked about skin and hair. Can you tell us a little bit more about your gut and any inflammation there? I hear gluten, diarrhea, constipation. You wrote that you've always been just fine and normal.
Mm-hmm. I've never had any digestive issues, but in the last few, probably couple of months, I've had a bit of stomach distension and more. More gassiness than that. No pain and no change in my digestion per se, but certainly, you know, more leaky gut issues probably. For
right.
Sure.
Domenica, what's happened since the reading of 8 in September? Did you have any stress in your life? Did you move?
Well, I have a home-based business, and besides, you know, running my family household and trying to be a sole entrepreneur, I just, you know, toward Christmas, I just let myself get too busy And, you know, even though, you know, you shouldn't, you just do. When you're feeling well, you do too much. And then before you know it, it just kind of, it's one of my triggers. Yeah. I just somehow allowed it to happen. I don't know why. Just the same pattern that I couldn't break in myself.
So I'm gonna just make a comment because I appreciate that because I got myself into a situation like that, and I found that every time I would think, so I changed my life around. And you'll read in the article, if you read go to heatherdane.com/self-care, you'll read in the article that I turned my life around. I was feeling better and I relapsed because I started to overwork again. You know, my main trigger was to overwork. And that's when I decided it was time for me to leave my giant paycheck and my, you know, really good corporate job, even though they were dangling golden handcuffs and all the stuff in front of me. And I knew that if I just waited 5 more years, I would be financially independent. Mm-hmm. And I decided that my health was more important. And even to this day, you know, it's something like 15-ish, a little more than 15 years later, I still find that I have to constantly watch my stress levels because I tend towards wanting to do too much. I'm wondering what you really want for your life. If you've written a vision of what your ideal life would look and feel like and how you would want your life to flow in the ideal way, you know, so that you could have a sort of a way to measure, are you in the flow of that or are you overdoing it?
Mm-hmm. I can completely relate to what you're saying because ironically, when I first became ill, I was working as a respiratory therapist, night shifts, commuting, and it was super stressful. So I made the cut from that stressful job, and somehow I worked myself back into another stressful situation, much like yourself.
Right.
If funnily enough, if I think about how I want my life to go and all how I want to feel, I kind of have all that already in a way, right? And I joy, a family that loves me, a partner who cares about me, a good roof over my head, you know.
Need to work?
No reason to keep striving. I just need to break that habit.
So, but do you need to work?
Not really.
Okay.
When it comes down to it, probably not.
So can we take some time and put your life back together? You know, I can think of a lot of things we talked about here tonight that, you know, to relieve that stress and to take some real time. You did well with a stem cell transplant before, correct? Autologous?
I did all right for, you know, a certain period of time, but within a year, the PET scan that I had in the, let me back up. I had it in August of 2009. I believe it was January, the PET scan was still positive, so they considered it a failure.
Yeah. I see balance coming back. So I know what they consider a failure, but when you said a little while ago that the Opdivo wasn't working, well, your CRP came down to normal. You got acute inflammation. So what wasn't working? PET scans are relatively imprecise, but at any rate, so I'm looking, so I hear leaky gut and I hear something we haven't addressed with the ions, and I talked about the tryptophan metabolism paper at the beginning of the show. And so that I think heal the gut.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start right now, whether we do, you know, 40,000 volts or restore. I like, I like going towards Zach Bush only because it's you know, plug and play, and you don't have a resource issue right now. And you could, I think that's going to knock that CRP back down, take that pressure off those T cells, off that adaptive immune response, which is miscommunicating with the B cells, because of course Hodgkin's lymphoma is a B cell disease, but we've got to put the balance back on. And so I think
what about that fast that you were talking about?
I love that fast, and that was the next thing I was going to say, but we have to seal it first. Have to seal the leaky gut. And then we're going to go to Dr. Walter Longo, L-O-N-G-O. He is in Victor, A-L-T-E-R. And he's doing the longevity diet. And it's a 3-day, 72-hour fast. And what we're going to do once we get your gut sealed up and healthy and take down the inflammation is take a 3-day fast along with some bone broth and some good cannabinoid formulations, and maybe a little camel's milk for those nanobodies, to take some of the pressure off your B cells. And we're going to, you know, take 3 days. And what it does is your cells are going to go look for food. So they're going to go break down all the disease cells and use the components, all the amino acids, to rebuild healthy cells. So they know, and I'll make sure we put the book up and the papers. I'll make sure I get you the papers tonight that show how it works, but we've got to stop the bleeding first. We've got to triage you and get the acute problem down. And that's that CRP and that liver function. And then we'll come in with a fast, and we'll come in with some, you know, I know your doctor wanted to do the bendamustine, the nitrogen mustard, but that's really hard on the liver. I might even say that at some point in town, but not before we get the liver function and the detox function back.
Okay, that sounds great. I wanted to also ask about B vitamins, because I know that when I had some functional medicine testing about just over a year ago, it came back that I was having trouble methylating, and the suggestions were I was low on B, you know, B1, B2, B5, B6.
Folate and B12 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so methylfolate, B5 is a huge one for that anxiety. B5. People don't say it enough. A friend of mine, I lost her name in my brain right now, but Tanya has been teaching me about B5 over the past 4 or 5 years.
So. Pantothenic acid.
Correct. Uh-huh. B5 is huge in the adrenal stress and this control of that acute thing. Just huge, huge, huge. And you'll hear Zach Bush talk about that, and I believe it's even written in these couple of papers. But I think we can put together, let's start now and restore the gut. Any way you do it, today, tomorrow.
Okay.
Do you feel like she should heal the leaky gut before taking B vitamins?
No, she can do that at the same time.
And that's okay. Is it okay in general for people who have cancer who are showing that they have B vitamin deficiency, or is this something to be careful about?
Well, I'm careful about everything, but all people with cancer have B vitamin deficiency, and you know, I'll look at simple nutritional ways to get most of everything, because I really don't like pills and supplements, but I do have some formulations and some general products, and I'm sure you do too, and I know I heard some from Janet Levitin in Autism One, and so I just have to take a quick look at the B vitamin experts, because it's certainly going to be methylcobalamin, because you're not going to want to take a methyl group off of any other part since you're already stressed for substrate. And so we're going to so we'll need to fix that all. But I mean, the way I understand you know, the magnesium, the ion control, the balance there, is it's really a critical thing to do first, or good things go to bad places and that makes them bad things. So,
I saw that if you take 5-MTHF, because I know that your oat said your organic acids test talked about Figlu, which is one of the high ratings that you had. And I wanted to hear what Judy said about B12. They said take folate. You could take folate or a low dose of 5-MTHF. Like, I would say start, wait on the 5-MTHF till you heal the leaky gut and start with the B12.
Yeah.
But as Judy said, methylcobalamin, try sublingual since your gut is a little leaky right now. The sublingual will get it into your bloodstream and help to start healing and sealing your gut along with the bone broth I know you're already doing. Mm-hmm. I see a need for B6, vitamin B6, and magnesium. You could take the Restore, and if you decide that's working for you, then that's great. You could also consider having 1 to 2 dropperfuls of Anderson CMD across all your glasses of water for the day. So, you know, not 2 dropperfuls in 1 glass. I do that, but I need a lot of minerals, and we don't know yet what you need till you see how you respond to it. So a few drops, like 5 drops in a glass of water across all your water. And then 40,000 volts you could use as an adrenal cocktail, which we learned about through Morley Robbins. I use 40,000 volts instead of cream of tartar. My understanding of, I don't like potassium without it being in its ionic form. So this is potassium with magnesium and all the other minerals together. And if you put that in some lemon for your liver, a little squeezed lemon juice, mm-hmm. With some 40,000 volts, that will give you an adrenal cocktail that you could have once or twice a day, say half a teaspoon of 40,000 volts at 10 a.m. and at 3 p.m. for your adrenals to give you that support. For me, when I started going through menopause and I just started having hot flashes, I started upping my 40,000 volts a little bit. And I had no more hot flashes. They were gone. Completely disappeared. After a week of adding more 40,000 volts, I had 0 hot flashes because the vascular issue that I was having, hot flashes are a vascular issue. So, and obviously vascular system is connective tissue related. And so when I added more potassium, it told my vascular system what to do. Basically, I was short that sodium potassium pump. So you could try that if the Restore isn't working. If it's working and you're happy, you don't even need to go there. I saw a need for CoQ10 and its partner PQQ, pyroquinolone quinine, because of the lactate and the fatigue. So if you're super tired, this might be a nice morning thing. And you can actually get PQQ that's sublingual from Seeking Health. Our friend Dr. Ben Lynch put it under your tongue. And it'll go right into your bloodstream. And CoQ10 and PQQ work together for your mitochondria. One of them is repairing, and the other one is helping to build the energy. So you could try taking 2 of those. And, you know, I didn't know, Judy, if you would recommend something like N-acetylcysteine for the liver and also for – she's got high sulfate and NAC, N-acetylcysteine, NAC, can bring those levels. It can help with the high sulfates. But I'm not sure because I don't know whether you're having trouble with thiols or not. And thiols are in kale, collards, the cruciferous vegetables that give people a gassy, trapped gas feeling that can create fatigue and irritability. So gut brain, when you eat them, it can create either, I had both when I had this problem, but some people only feel it in the brain and some people only feel it in the gut.
Well, I definitely don't have gut issues with those things.
Okay. And when you write your food log, if you notice that thiol foods like kale, collard, the cruciferous vegetables, quinoa, things like that are creating anxiety and irritability and fatigue. If you notice a correlation, you could back off those foods until you, usually what needs to happen is you go on more of an animal protein, plant, like some, not as many plants, but a little more on the animal protein and fats. And then you bring the more of the vegetables back in, but you got to see how, I don't have your methylation report. So mm-hmm. I can't tell if this could be an issue for you right now. And I wasn't sure because, Judy, they mentioned in her test about glutathione. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how you feel because NAC helped build glutathione. You think that would be a bad thing to do.
I use a liver detox called Detox from the company Pharmanex.
Okay.
I love that because it has N-acetylcysteine and milk thistle, and through the last 15 years or so, you know, the AIDS patients whose livers weren't functioning didn't heal. And
okay.
So they did not get well. They did not respond to therapy. So this detox isn't a very expensive product. I can put her in touch if she's in BC with somebody right there who will, you know, sell it to her. I'll get in touch with Dr. Lamont, who is Canadian as well.
Okay, great.
And hold of that. I like that product. I use it a lot.
What about, how do you feel about coffee enemas?
I know a lot of people who like them and who use them. I guess it's still my thing until we fix the leaky gut. I still don't want to do a coffee enema. I love the purines. I love caffeine. I love calming the danger signals. I saw the adenosine issue, the ATP in her write-up. I think about adenosine that is immune suppressive. So we're trying, she responded well when you took the brakes off the immune system. So what I'm trying to do is balance the adenosine and the ATP and the danger signals. This is the purinergic metabolism question in the crosstalk that I gave in Autism 1 and beyond. But that, I think, yes, coffee enemas down the road. No, not now until you get that, magnesium. That's why I like detox the same reason I like Restore. I'm a cookie cutter person. I really investigate what I take, and I like to take less, but have it be a product I really trust and have used for decades. Or a long time, or trust the people who made it. So I don't want to put it all together myself, even though I'm the chemist. So I like to just use less and just use a few things so that you're not taking a cupboard full of supplements and you don't know what's not working with each other. We formulate them together and want them to work together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about baculin?
Well, I love baculin. I love scutellaria. And the other place for a fabulous source of methyl B12 that I never knew before, that my friend Lace gave me some hump fat, and you can laugh, but it's camel hump fat from desertfarms.com. And my other friend Teresa and I, we dropped some baculin, the powder we get from Lift Mode, the yellow powder, into the hump fat. It's loaded with methyl B12, and it really tastes good. So you can take it. So hump fat, yeah. So hump fat, it's loaded with B12. And you think about the harsh conditions that the camels live under, and fat is so important. The cannabinoid signaling is fat. Everything about what's affecting our brain, our blood-brain barrier is fat. So there's the nutrients concentrated in this hump fat, and it's the first time I've ever known baculin to actually taste good. I actually like it, and we've actually put it on some wounds here, cancer patients with open wounds, and we're literally sealing them up because it doesn't melt easily. If they live in the desert, it doesn't melt easily. It stays pretty solid. So amazing the games we play in my kitchen in Carlsbad, my kitchen office at Marking. But
that
was a fabulous thing. It's a great source of that.
For I think somebody's asking about adenosyl B12. If you're asking about hydroxy B12, there are some people who recommend hydroxy B12. I don't. And there's a whole host of reasons why I like the methyl and the adenosyl B12. And for those of you who have COMT, which we talked about in the last class, you would want to take adenosyl B12 four times a week. And if you need methyl B12, you would take methyl B12 maybe two or three times a week. But the adenosyl B12, there's a company called, Anabol Naturals that makes one that the ME-CFS community has found a lot of help with.
Right.
And There's also Seeking Health. Dr. Ben Lynch also has another one. So both of which are sublinguals. Right. And I always recommend sublinguals with B12 and shots for B12 because most people who I'm working with have gut issues. And right. I used to take sprays. The sprays only ever fix the surface level problems. The theory of the sublingual is you let it sit under your lip or under your tongue for as long as possible, hopefully 90 minutes, and just let it go as long as possible. The theory being that your cells need to be bathed in it for a certain period of time. So that's why I like the shots for people who have really chronic conditions, because it bathes the fat cells for 3 days. So your body is getting a message, B12 is here. You know, and instead of peeing it out right away, you're getting just what you need and peeing out the extra. But the what you need is sitting in your fat cells, reminding your body that, you know, it's got what it needs to do its job. So that you can kind of mock that by keeping a sublingual under your tongue as long as possible.
And this is really important for you, Dee, because of your weight loss issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just too thin. We've got to get some fat on you.
Yeah. Good animal fats, good retinol rich, like raw organic, raw butter or organic cultured ghee, or other chicken schmaltz from really good organic grass fed or pasture fed animals, beef tallow, the camel hump, things like that. Camel hump fat will be really helpful for that. And then I wanted to ask you two things, Judy, regarding Dominica's situation. One is, I'm wondering what you think about therapeutic phlebotomy to get rid of free iron that is oftentimes building up with chronic conditions. Do you recommend that she gets a therapeutic phlebotomy? Because I don't think you can give blood when you've got a chronic health issue.
I actually only use therapeutic phlebotomy in stem cell failure. I mean, when the situation gets really tough and the iron levels are rising, and I didn't see that issue. So I think there are some ways to modulate that without that drastic. I don't like anything where we're putting, so that reminds me to ask Dee about the mistletoe. I'm not really comfortable with the IV vitamin C and mistletoe. I think you might be adding a little extra stress.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that.
We both got the heebie-jeebies when we read that.
Oh, well,
I don't mind as much IV vitamin C, but you can do vitamin C without going IV, and I'm just uncomfortable with, you know, there's nothing natural about sticky needles and things. So if we can get some liposomal vitamin C, I really like the products of Chris Shade as far as the liposomal products and the liposomal cannabis. He's got some interesting combination formulations. Just prefer liposomal rather than infusions, because infusions introduce toxicity, and I just don't know sources of mistletoe. And I do know anecdotally of cancer therapies with mistletoe, but I just think at this point in time, since we don't know what's causing that acute inflammation, and that started somewhere along the mistletoe time, as I heard it, I might eliminate some things that you weren't doing when your CRP was down to 8.
Okay. Well, it's getting pretty expensive anyway, so maybe it's a good thing that I switch off that. Ironically, I just bought some liposomal vitamin C today for my family, so I can switch to that.
Perfect. Yeah, do that. I think that makes us both a little less CBGB.
Did you say that you might have an idea for a CBD oil?
I have several ideas.
For me?
Yeah. I do. I have several ideas, and we are doing a lot of work in Canada.
Great.
I have places to direct you in BC in particular.
Okay. I've been taking one, but it's...
Oh, if you just tell me what it is. We want some THC, and I mean, not right now, but we can text or email or go back and forth with correspondence.
Sure. I'll tell you the company that sourced it, but...
Okay.
It's registered with Health Canada.
Right. Well, we have our, some of our dearest friends are working in Health Canada, and so we have a lot going on in cannabis. And good place to be.
So, yeah. So Domenica, do you want to send us send Kim the type of CBD you're taking?
Sure.
And then we can get you an answer on that. And I want to see if you can start working on the gut stuff and get back to us and let us know how you're doing.
Sure. Okay. Is it possible for you guys to lay out a bit of a protocol for me of sorts for like amounts and which, like, not so much for food, I guess, cause I got that, but in terms of the, some of the supplements and stuff that you're suggesting.
Sure.
That would be really helpful. Thank you.
We'll take a quick look at it. That's what we do. And not a quick look. We take a lot of time. So yeah, we'll definitely put a protocol together and say for this week, here's ABC. Okay.
One more question about the healthy fats. Does grass-fed high-fat yogurt, is that okay or a no-no?
Oh, I like it. I mean, we use goat yogurt. We use, you know, so grass-fed's not as much. The issue is you want to make sure the glyphosate's not there.
Right.
So that's the biggest single problem of finished, grass-fed, grass-finished. You know, we do the best we can as far as not exposing it, but yogurt is not usually dried, so the drying agent of glyphosate Roundup is not usually an issue. So yeah, love those yogurts. They're good for you.
Yeah, I've been craving them like crazy.
Okay. So we'll send you a couple more things afterward, Domenica. Please do keep us posted how you're doing.
I will.
And we'll be in touch. And thank you for, you know, being here tonight and being our case study.
Thank you so much, Heather. I don't know how, but you read my mind. All the questions that I had, right down to the phlebotomy, because I haven't had my cycle since about, you know, 2009, I was going to ask all these things and you just kept popping them up. So thank you for that.
Good.
Mind reader.
Thanks, Domenica.
Okay. Both of you, thank you with all my heart.
You're welcome. I want to put you in touch with Leslie Karabatha on that cycle because you didn't mention it. So we'll get you in touch with her and we'll give her a look because these expert eyes are great.
Great.
Terrific.
Wonderful. Well, we've got another hand up, don't we, Joel?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to try to wrap this up soon, but we've got one more hand up. So let's unmute. Who is it? I can't see from my end.
Nina.
Hi, Nina.
Oh, I see Nina.
Nina? Is she there?
She was there. She looked like she was bed bound.
Okay, so we'll try this again. We're going to try Nina again. I'm just going to take a look at some of the questions. There's a question that somebody has about reversing blockage of the arteries. They have normal APOE. What other options are there? I'm going to refer you to, we have a class July 19th that I'm going to be putting up. We have a panel of professionals who are going to be talking about cardiovascular disease, heart health, as well as stroke, artery health, and things like that.
I'd love to weigh in on the immunology of that. There's so many fabulous new papers.
Okay, good. Will you be on our paddle, Judy?
You say what day?
It's the 19th of July. I'll talk to you while we travel together next week and we'll work it out.
Okay.
Okay. So we're gonna cover that and I'm gonna save this question for that class. We have somebody who says their sister has stage 4 ovarian cancer. She did one round of chemo, both through a port and through a port directly into her stomach. Then a clinical trial. When it continued to grow, she went back to chemo. Are there any suggestions for her, mushrooms, cannabis, CBD supplements, etc.? The family has no BRCA genes. Two of them have complete hysterectomies. She has full-blown cancer. And she is taking CBD in 15 milligram capsules, agricultural hemp and extra virgin olive oil.
Well, how old is she?
We don't have any information.
I will look. That sounds like my dear friend here who I'll see tomorrow. And there are certainly some interesting new immune therapies. I'll take a look and see. I only hear chemotherapy, but yeah, lots of answers hopeful answers for ovarian cancer. Tough situation, but I do think we have some things we can provide for you. That's one I particularly do almost every day.
Okay, great. And then with respect to what are your thoughts about C60 as an anti-inflammatory age reversal supplement as well as its potential to eradicate tumors?
I don't know C60.
I don't either.
So we will have to look it up.
It's being used in cosmetics but hasn't yet gotten FDA approval.
Okay, so I'll have to look what C60 is. Thank you. I see that she is 65 with the ovarian cancer, so that helps me a lot. So, we'll look at that and see. We'll get down to the nitty-gritty of the chemos there and see what's available there.
Okay. We have a nursing student who says she's had to gather a lot of old health records and vaccine information, and she's wondering if she's possibly vaccine injured. I don't have anything else here, but
all nursing people are vaccine injured.
Really?
They're mandated. Well, here in California, you don't work if you don't get those. So unless you wear a mask, and we always ask for the mask because we know they know better. So I think we can detox. Aluminum is the primary problem in most DTP, DTAP, all TDAP. So BioSil is a great detox. We can do some Corellas. We can support the immune system. Cannabis is a wonderful healer, and sometimes we need THC, so I'll find out where she is, and if she's in a THC friendly state, we'll get her location, we'll get her some therapeutic options to clear the vaccine injury.
Okay, great. And then also, you know, if you haven't taken, whoever asked this question, if you haven't taken the immune classes and the medical cannabis class, I highly recommend listening to that one because you'll get a lot of really great information as well as how to, Judy gave some support in how to think about customizing the type of cannabinoids that you're taking because it's not a one size fits all answer here. Someone's asking, are some symptoms whole body aches or severe nerve pain? Increased and severe allergies that did not exist prior to that. This must be an add-on. So she's got body aches, severe nerve pain, severe allergies that didn't exist prior to a vaccine.
It's absolutely vaccine injury. So I don't mind if you take and I can work directly one-on-one because that's absolutely a vaccine injury, and we've become pretty good at calming that down.
Okay. So go to markinc.org. And let Judy know that you are.
Just say you were listening tonight. It's the info at the email just ends up in my mailbox for fun. So I'll answer you as soon. I've had some issues with my emails because the government really doesn't like me talking. So they go down when I talk on some of these Skypes. It's the only time the Skype goes down, but I'll bring it back up and we'll get to you. And if I don't write you, write back to Heather and she'll get back to me and say, here you go. So we'll find a way to communicate. We have a secure proton mail.
Right. Write to Kim at price-pottinger.org and she'll make sure that we get messages.
Great.
Somebody has a question about macular degeneration. They have some genetic variants. They want to know if it's safe for them to use cannabis in the form of CBD. What nutrients and supplements would you recommend?
Yeah, there are some. There's certainly some CBDs that are safe in macular degeneration. We do know some of the genetics. I have to address the great Dr. Rossetti for that one because that is his expertise. So I will get back on macular degeneration, but yes, cannabis can help with eye issues because they're vasculitis issues. Bone broth can help. I just saw the question pop up with vasculitis issues. So can the The minerals and the issues there help with some of these vascular issues. So all of these things work together, and the eyes are one of the, and yes, bilberry, blueberry, some of these things work very well. So we'll get back on those and answer directly, because there's a lot of great work in macular degeneration lately and healing, curative properties. Therapeutics.
And go get those books Judy recommended. So Judy, I don't want you to have to go do research studies for every single question that we get here, because you'll probably never get anything else done. But you know, go back to the class, the medical cannabis class, and also we posted the books in that class that Judy recommended, which have a lot of information about how you can customize the cannabidiols that you're wanting to take for different conditions.
And the good news is every week, so believe it or not, it's what we do. So every week, so we just learned of a brand new company and the product somewhere right here on the floor that has put some of these combinations together that is what we exactly wanted. So it's a company called C3 and Exogen. And I met with Andrew, who happens to the CEO, who happens to live in Carlsbad, just last week. So I can get right to Andrew. Andrew can get to you, and we can cut through the middleman, because every single day we learn. As people hear these shows, they say, "Hey, Judy, do you, Dr. Judy, know about so and so?" And so we're like, "No," and they're like, "Hey, talk to them," and they have great products. So we're learning. There are more things that are our form, which is cookie cutter, so we don't have to do it in my kitchen counter, and so we can do it. So yes, I don't mind the individual research projects, because that's how we learn. And okay. Then in events like tonight, that's how we learn. So I can't do every one, but some of the things that we've already answered, but certainly like the new products from C3, I'm delighted to share with people.
So your eyes are 80% collagen, and one of the things that I found is that when I started adding collagen peptides, and remember that I have a four decades long connective tissue disorder. So one of the things that they test when they're testing people with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is the veins in the eyes. And so I usually will ask for that extra test when I go get my eyes done. And I noticed that I could see better all of a sudden, you know, at the age of 49, that suddenly I didn't need my glasses when I was driving, because I added two extra scoops of collagen peptides. I decided at some point to stop taking the collagen peptides, and my vision got a little bit blurry. So I do bone broth every day. I do a cup or two or sometimes three cups of bone broth every day to support my connective tissue. But the collagen peptides, I think, deals at the periphery of the body. I think it helps with the, you know, extremities and eyes and things at the periphery of the body. When I added the collagen peptides back in, my eyes were not blurry anymore. Right. So I think that there's something that extra that it's doing. It's different from bone broth. The types of collagen are different. It's a little gentler on the body. So if you're having macular degeneration, consider bone broth paired with a scoop or two of collagen peptides, which you can mix into any liquid.
And do you have those brands of collagen peptides?
Yeah, I like perfectsupplements.com, and I also like Vital Proteins. Now, I look for, you know, grass-fed and from pure sources, and Perfect Supplements, the reason I like them is because I like a good deal, and if you buy six or more containers of their products, they give you 30% off. So that's a pretty big deal, and you can get together with friends if you don't want to buy that much all at once, but it's pretty nice to get that discount, so you're going to end up spending a lot less than you would on the Vital Proteins, even though I really like Vital Proteins as a product.
Okay.
Okay, so do you know anything about Alinia, A-L-I-N-I-A?
It's a broad spectrum antiretroviral. It's antimicrobial. It's good for Lyme. Yeah, it's a pharmaceutical product, And yes, Alinea has been useful for retroviral diseases, for parasites, for, you know, the, as Dr. Klinghart said last week at Autism One, you know, you cannot have Bartonella and Babesia without a retrovirus. You know, that's one of your traveling pathogens, and Alinea is fabulous for those co-infections. Great. So yes, it can be toxic. I mean, these are things that you want to think about with a healthcare professional. So we're, you know, the disclaimer here is we're not telling you how to treat yourself and play doctor. We're encouraging you to work with healthcare professionals and talk to your doctors about Alinea. But yes, we've had a great deal of success since HIV in the 80s with Alinea.
Okay, great. And then I think that this is all the same question, even though they were separated out, but the person said that they did have a three-part hepatitis B vaccination. The one who was wondering if they were vaccine injured, could that be why their allergies and nerve pains got worse? Do you think they're connected to that Hep B three-part vaccination?
Yes, absolutely. That was a very toxic vaccination.
Yeah. Okay, we have another question here. It's about how to heal from long-term exposure to herbicides and industrial toxicants. Okay, so somebody's asking about my show with Paul Mills on GMOs and glyphosate. The health problems appeared when she was living amid hundreds of acres of oat fields and other crops, and we learned from Paul Mills that oats and wheat are usually the ones that get dried with glyphosate. Okay. She lived within 5 miles of Monsanto's local field office. There were crop dusters regularly spraying. She lived there for 3.5 years, moved away 6 years ago, but symptoms continue to progress. Did a tox chem urine panel that showed an extremely elevated level of dichlorophenoacetic acid, phenoxyacetic acid, an herbicide commonly used in agriculture on genetically modified foods. Also, her glyphosate and MTBE levels were high. Her diet's been primarily organic for 12 plus years. And the urine test, Paul was telling us that the urine test reflects current exposure. So she's concerned as to why her levels remain so high. Cause usually, Paul did the first study on humans and glyphosate in urine and, found that since the 2 decades that we've been using glyphosate, that the amounts in urine has been increased by 1,000% in those 2 decades. And, the people who do the urine tests, typically they find that if you start eating organic within a couple of weeks, you can start detoxing it out of your urine. But what Paul said is that he's at UCSD. He's now doing research on, the tissues. Okay. Because urine is one thing, but the tissues are another thing.
Right.
So
the tissues, right.
So it's possible that for this person, it's really built. I mean, look, you are right near Mount Santo and those farms. It's possible that it's in the tissues. And Judy, if it's in the tissues and it's continuously going through the tissues, would it constantly be coming out in the urine as well?
No, because see, glyphosate is glycine with a phosphate molecule. And so glyphosate is particularly a problem in the most, and the most flexible in connective tissue disorders. So glycine is the smallest amino acid and the most flexible. So if you put a phosphate molecule on the end of it, then it gets incorporated into your proteins that have glycine in them, the ones that are supposed to be flexible, and all of a sudden it doesn't work. So once it gets into the tissues, you know, you're breaking down certain tissues and it becomes a problem because those tend to be long-lived cells. And, you won't see it in the blood necessarily. And that's my friend Stephanie Seneff. So I need to ask her, how long-term to minimize the connective tissue is. Certainly we need to take away the source.
Maybe it would be fun to have you and Stephanie on a panel and do a class.
Sure,
yeah, let's do that.
You'll Zoom us.
So we're going to do that. So I'm going to take this question and I will see if I can get to Paul Mills and ask him this question, as well as let's get Judy and Stephanie Seneff on, and we'll also be able to, I'll save this question if Paul Mills doesn't have an answer for us. Okay. So I think we got through Let me just take a look here. Camel's milk question. This person has heard that the camel's milk has been contaminated with viruses like John Cunningham virus and Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS virus, and they're wanting to know, should they be concerned?
Well, I mean, I don't know of the sources that we're using in America any contamination issues. And I say the benefits far outweigh the risks because those antibodies, those adaptogens, those things that are sealing up the gut, it's not something you take a lot of. You need a couple of ounces a day. So the benefits outweigh the risk. So, I mean, I know that the federal government wants to stop us from healing. So they tend to say, oh, they're all contaminated with MRSA or something. But no, we haven't heard of. And that's where I encourage you to talk to our friend Barry Smeltzer in Austin, Texas, and look at his lecture on Autism One, because, you know, that's the expert. He's the guy that taught me, and we're seeing far more healing than we're seeing, and I don't ever recall a problem with it.
And I think that's why you've told us that you like the lightly pasteurized one, right? Judy?
I do use the lightly. Barry and I disagree on that because you do get more value, but we use the lightly pasteurized frozen one, and I just have it in my freezer. It's a little 4-ounce container, and I'll do a little every now and again in either a cup of tea. I even cook it with my bone broth and my mushrooms. So I've got all kinds of fabulous mushrooms in a sauce with beef, and my husband has no idea he's getting healthy.
I think we're all going to end up over at your house, Judy. Once we get enough funding, we are going to do a kitchen class in the Bastyr University's kitchen. We'll do a mixing class. We might be able to do that sooner because we have somebody who's offered up their home to us. So maybe we can get this done sooner, but so that we can all learn how to mix and make things.
Yeah,
with
it's
our
fun to cook. We'll even cook with our hump fat, right?
Exactly. Yes, we have to have hump fat on the list because I want to make some of that too. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank you all for submitting your questions ahead of time. I want to thank you, Dr. Judy Mikovits, for your tireless efforts, and I hope that you're getting sleep and taking care of yourself. Dr. Judy and I are going to be presenting at the Gathering of Good Minds, which is we're going to be presenting to the Haudenosaunee Six Nations Iroquois in upstate New York. So I'm very excited to travel with you, and this is all part of the work that we continue to do because we plan to bring you more Indigenous medicine people as well, and we hope we'll meet some people there that we can also feature as part of this program. And we're going to be learning from the communities there about what they want and what they need and how we can bring back a more natural approach to medicine from a collaborative perspective. So I want to just say, Dr. Judy, for all that you do and all you continue to do, you're an incredibly inspiring human, and I so appreciate your giving your time to us for this nonprofit program. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. I can't wait to learn from the Indigenous people.
Thanks, Dr. Judy.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody joining us. Thank you again to Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation for the seed funding for us to all gather together and have this program. Gunalunkwa, everyone, I love you, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thank you.